Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune into DLC. Hey, are you one of our geeks and sneaks out there using DLC to get you through a run or a workout? We are so glad you're with us using DLC to fuel you through. Doesn't it feel great to know that I'm talking to you? DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsors this week, Casper, Hover, and Mac Mini Colo. They made that possible, bringing the show to you. DLC is the show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. And also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff 2Ns1T Kanata, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis. My own personal inverse Hulk. You wouldn't like him if he wasn't angry. It's Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Mr. Kanata. How are you this fine Monday?
Are you ready for Avengers Week?
I am ready for Avengers Week, also known as Wolfenstein the Old Blood Week, also known as I'm probably going to have a second kid week. So yeah, I'm ready.
Oh, is it this week? Is she due this week?
I mean, we're at the point where it's any day now, really. The due date is like the 5th, I think. But once you get to that window, it's, we're waiting.
Wow. Excitement on all levels. As you know, DLC is always your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian, but this week is the perfect guest for Avengers Week. We are excited because DLC stands for Diablo Leads to Comics, because we have the creator of the legendary Diablo franchise, who is now CEO of Gazillion and currently working on the action RPG Marvel Heroes, Mr. David Brevik. Welcome, David.
Thank you. Thanks for this opportunity.
Yeah, we're excited. I played a lot of Marvel Heroes when it was first released, a couple years ago now, right?
Right. Yeah. Coming up on 2-year anniversary.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed it at launch, but I know that you guys have recently re-released the game or relaunched it with the Marvel Heroes 2015 moniker and had a bunch of improvements and changes to the game. Can you tell us about what that's about?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm glad that you enjoyed it when it launched. I think you'll enjoy it even more now, but because it wasn't super well received when it first came out. And so we kind of buckled down and made a lot of changes, a lot of tough calls, a lot of things that we said, hey, we can fix this. We can make this better. And we did. We made the game much, much better than it was at launch. We changed almost everything about the game, so many, from the business model to changed a bunch of the heroes, to added a bunch of game modes and end game activities and all sorts of things. And the game had changed so much that we said, that we're only offered or afforded one opportunity to get reviewed, and that's really when you launch. And the game launched and it got a Metacritic score of 58, which, is not good. And we felt like, hey, the game's much, much better than it was. It's really unfair for us to be hung on that score at this point. And so when we rebranded the product as Marvel Heroes 2015, we got re-reviewed by a bunch of outlets. And we raised our Metacritic from a 58 to an 81. So
nice.
It's a massive improvement. And so the game's much better than it was when it launched. And we've added a ton of content to the game.
And it's still a free-to-play, top-down action RPG in the style of Diablo, right? But with
yeah, absolutely.
The
it is,
huge
it is.
Cast of Marvel Heroes, right?
Yeah, Yeah, it does. I think we're adding our 47th hero. Basically, the heroes are character classes, so we're basically adding our 47th character class this week with the Vision, and which is in conjunction with the movie, obviously. And so it is a top-down action RPG game where you play as the Marvel superheroes. It's also an MMO, but it's not an MMO like World of Warcraft kind of MMO. It's just an MMO in that there are thousands of people in the same game at the same time, and you run across people in hubs and out in public combat zones and things like that. So it's still very much an action RPG item hunt type of game.
Yeah, I re-downloaded it this week. I haven't been able to put a ton of time back into it, but like I said, I was one of those people that really liked it the first time around. And I booted up Captain America, and I played the first couple of missions, and man, it's awesome. You feel like those heroes, and I mean, I genuinely dig that kind of genre in and of itself, and to be able to do it with Marvel heroes is a blast. So I'm excited to play more of it over the next few weeks.
And thank you. I think the relisting or renaming and coming out for reviews is a really interesting approach that was creative from your guys' part. And I understand the desire behind it. With games being so fluid, for better or worse sometimes, it really is interesting. Like, you know, websites like Polygon will re-review games sometimes if, the preview they get, the multiplayer works and then it doesn't work or something changes or this, that, and the other. I mean, is this something that you would like to see more of in terms of how games are reviewed, or do you kind of understand you get one shot at the apple and then, you know, that's your bite? Like, as someone who's making these games that are constantly changing, how would you like to see reviews or critiques handled for content that's coming out?
Yeah, and that's a great question. It is a problem, in my opinion. The fact of the matter is that games as a service is a totally different way to create games and have games exist. And the press, for the most part, adheres to this system that is meant for one model, which is the box product on the shelf kind of thing. So when you have a game that's a game as a service and it changes and they add new features and make it better and better over time, they aren't really afforded the ability to get re-reviewed, even the product may be completely different. It's much more akin to television than it is to movies, right? It's very, yeah, very similar in that movies get reviewed, but they're only once, and that's very much like a box product. Whereas television, they get reviewed on kind of their seasons, right? You know, in every season, it's they get a new score, and you've seen many TV shows that started out poor, they get better and better over time, and have different new reviews. People start to get into it, and then it becomes a very popular show. The fact is that the same thing can happen with games, especially games as a service here, where the games change and new stuff gets added and things improve over time. And really the press hasn't caught up with that same kind of mentality. It's still kind of worked in games as a service where you had the expansion pack model, because the expansion pack would get re-reviewed, but we don't sell anything. I mean, it's a free-to-play game, and we give all the content away, so we don't bundle it up into something that you're going to sell and get a review for. We just come out with the content when it's deemed the right time to come out with it, it's in its best shape. So we're putting out stuff all the time. Every month there's new features and things like that, and then that's too much for a single outlet to re-review. It's like, oh, I can't re-review your product every month. So there has to be something where there's a seasons or whatever. And so our way that we dealt with that was this rebranding of putting the year on it. And then every year, you know, we have a chance to get a new look at the product.
It's very cool. Very cool. I'm excited to play more of it. I know you guys have a big content pack in conjunction with Ultron as well coming up, right?
Yeah, that's correct. We have a bunch of stuff that we're adding to the game. We're adding an Ultron mode so that, you know, the level cap in the game is 60. As a level 60 player, you can kind of take on Ultron. Ultron's drones kind of go out throughout the entire game. They permeated all sorts of different parts of the game. You can play as any of the Avengers as one of your starting heroes now for the next few weeks. Vision is coming. Scarlet Witch is having a major design review. Black Widow and Hawkeye had reviews. We've got all the Avenger costumes from the movie, including a Hulkbuster Iron Man suit, which looks amazing. So there's lots and lots of things that are coming to the game with this big patch.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we're glad to hear about that, but let's get now to Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happen in the world of games this week. David, as our guest, you get first pick of stories. So what would you consider to be your Story of the Week?
Wow. There were quite a few. As a businessman, some of the Konami rumors are interesting. I think that the Steam issues, you know, with them selling their I want to say add-ons, but that's not the right word.
Mods.
But the mods or whatever that's been pretty controversial this week. So those are the things that kind of come to mind for me as my first choice.
Let's start with the mods on Steam, because I think that is a major, major story. Certainly generated a lot of debate online with people freaking out, online petitions with over 50,000 signatures saying, please stop this practice. Gabe Newell had to go on and do an Ask Me Anything on Reddit to try to address the issue. I'm very curious to hear your thoughts, David, but I'll just recap it real quick for our listeners in case anybody missed the news. Basically, the Steam Workshop is a section of Steam that allows people to put out mods for various games. One of the most popular games in the modding community is Skyrim. And there are thousands of Skyrim mobs, some of them very, very popular and some of them very, very cool. Some we've talked about on the show before. And Skyrim became the first game that is going to take advantage of a new policy on Steam that allows creators of game mods, which are usually amateurs, usually hobbyists who are just creating stuff to create it, to mess with the game and add new things that they want. They're now being able to charge for their work, being able to charge for these mods. And up to this point, the fees have been relatively small, just a few dollars, up to about $6 is the most expensive one. And they're bundling them together in packs that you can buy for more money. But this caused an uproar in people that are used to getting this stuff for free, and now it's going to be charged. In fact, there's already one mod that had to be removed from the service because it had some tech in it from somebody else's mod, and so there was a complaint about not paying the right creator, so that's a little bit messy. As a creator of games and as a creator of games that have been modded, how do you feel about modders making money?
I see both sides of this issue. I know this is that's not really much of an answer, but the fact is that I believe that people should be able to, when they make an important mod that gets played a lot, and that people should be able to benefit from that. The fact is that they go through tons of time and effort. Some of these people spend hundreds of hours making these things, and they should get rewarded for their time and effort of making something awesome. But at the same time, it is a tough thing to swallow when you're not sure what you're going to be buying, or you're not sure how valuable this thing is. Somebody's going to charge me whatever, $5 for this thing, and it turns out it's a piece of junk. And then you get into rights issues, like you said. Hey, this mod used this other mod that was free, and now you're charging for it, and like it becomes kind of a mess, right? So I think there are a lot of really sticky edge situations to it, and so in general, I think that I think that it should be that there should be some sort of process where they get deemed to be sellable almost and not make it completely up to anybody, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. It's tough to see how this is going to play out.
Yeah, they do have a 24-hour refund period, so there is a little bit of recourse as far as if you pay for a mod and ends up not being what you want. So there's that is, I think, commendable from Steam's perspective. But I kind of agree with you. I kind of sit in the middle here. I try not to take the cynical point of view, but the cynical side of me looks at the response to this, the outcry from this, and it sees people who are used to getting stuff for free, having to pay for things. And I feel like a lot of the justifications that people come up with about why they're upset is more of an excuse rather than the real reason, which is, hey, I'm used to getting this for free and now I have to pay money for it. What's your take on this, Christian?
It's nice to see people get paid for their work. The problems are many of the ones that you guys already discussed, right? It's people using other people's tech. Who's the police of that? Who's making sure that this is original content? Are you going to have mod developers suing one another? Is it small claims court? How much money is being made? How are you going to track these people down? Who's looking into all of that, checking the code and all of that stuff? The other side of the coin is, I mean, it's nice to see people getting paid, but at the same time, people that had been modding and spending hundreds of hours on these awesome, complex Skyrim mods or whatever were doing it. They went in eyes wide open. It's not as if, you know, some guy in a suit was like, hey, kid, come here into this alley. See, spend 40 hours on this mod for Skyrim. You'll make a lot of money. Ha ha. And then he runs away and doesn't pay him. Right. I mean, it's like these people were making these things out of pure passion or as a calling card to attract a business or a job or put it on a resume and putting it out. It's not as if they were duped into doing something and then, oh man, my only revenue for this is nothing. Now I'm sad. What a waste of time. So I kind of understand people being upset, and really, I don't look at this as Steam trying to find a way for the little hobbyist to make money. I think Steam looked at this for a way for them to make more money. Because I don't believe that they're altruistic in saying now Jeff the modder can make money. They were like, holy moly, people are making all these mods. We get free money.
But it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive, right? Both of those things can be true. They can say, hey, we can make some money, and they are taking a percentage. And they're also giving a percentage to the original game creator. So Bethesda is getting a portion of the sales of these mods, you know, as I would say they should if this is on the back of their platform, basically. But I think both things can be true. They can say, hey, these people are putting in a lot of work and this is a valuable thing that people are getting a lot of joy out of. They should get some money. I also think, you know, you talk about this sort of back alley duping thing. Nobody's getting duped, but I do think there are a lot of mods that go unfinished or unsupported because the initial spark and passion of that thing burns out under the weight of how much work it really is. And maybe we'll see better, cooler things made if it actually can be a revenue stream for these people.
Maybe, sure. Or it could go the other way as well. It could be that people pay a bunch of money for a mod with promises of a way it's going to be in the future, and then it doesn't get supported. What happens then?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point that the consumer at that point is being sort of sold a bill of goods and said, you know, you're saying, hey, I'm signing up for something that's going to be worth my money instead of just this hobby thing that I can download and fiddle with. And that maybe there's a bit of responsibility on the game creator or the mod creator at that point to create something that's worth money.
Or the hobbyist modder gets, you know, a cool little mod that maybe would have been awesome and taken over the world as other people added to it and tweaked to it in a, you know, collective commons IP approach or something like that. Doesn't get the focus because Steam doesn't highlight it because they're not making money off of it. Modding becomes a business. It's not a hobbyist modder anymore. It's groups of people working together to create mods. And it's just, you know, one more strike against cool little things getting created. Like, Steam has become, in my opinion, while still a wonderful marketplace for games in some aspects and other aspects, it is a rummage sale. And voting things up, green lighting this company, you know, you get hit up online where it's like, I guarantee I can get, are you green lighting a game? I guarantee I'll get you 50 upvotes. Are you submitting a mod? It's there's a dirty side to all of that stuff when there's not curation. And I feel like this modding thing is going to junk up their store more.
My takeaway from it, honestly, is that I think we are smack dab in the middle of a generation of people who want to pay for things if they have the choice to not pay for them. They don't want to be required to pay for things. I think people are very generous with their dollar and want to reward creators with monies if they're not required to. I think people, for some reason, we've gotten to this point where people resent being required to pay for things. And I think that's why Patreon and free to play and some of those things work so well, because people are like, yeah, I get joy out of this. They didn't make me enjoy it. They didn't make me pay for it initially, but I got to enjoy it for free and now I will pay for it. But if it's the other way around, I think there's some weird resentment to that. David, you're making a free to play game. Are you seeing any of that, or am I crazy?
No, I think that's true. I think that the require, you know, for something that was free and now, it doesn't mean that they're all going to be, you know, paid, but requiring they be bought will change. It will make people upset. Having it as a policy of a donation or, you know, an opt-in seems like a much better solution to me.
Interesting. This is an ongoing debate. I'm sure we'll see how it shakes out over the coming weeks and months, but certainly an interesting debate. And I'm curious to see how these mods do and if more games jump on this sold mod bandwagon.
No, Jeff, I will never speak of this topic again.
as well, you shouldn't. The other story that you brought up, David, is this bizarre goings on with Konami. So we talked a few weeks ago about Hideo Kojima, the creator of Metal Gear Solid, leaving Konami, the disassociation of him with Konami, and the fact that the next Metal Gear Solid will be his final Metal Gear Solid, his final game with them. And we conjectured about the status of Silent Hills, which is the upcoming, or was the upcoming, sequel to Silent Hill that Kojima was collaborating with Guillermo del Toro on. We got confirmation this week that is officially canceled, and that the PT, the playable teaser that so many people were talking about a few months ago, is being removed from the PlayStation Network as of April 30th. So you can't even get it anymore. They are completely shuttering that whole project. A bizarre sounding press release talked about how it was still embryonic, which is a weird way to talk about it. Anyway, so that's unfortunate for people that were excited about a new Silent Hill, especially with those big name creators involved, but not terribly surprising. And then this morning, there was this news about Konami delisting itself from the New York Stock Exchange. Now, a lot of people in the games press are putting those two things together. I don't think there's really any evidence that one is, has anything to do with the other. And I'm certainly I'm certainly out of my depth when it comes to, you know, stock market analysis. But there is a lot of discussion with people that are more knowledgeable than I am, more informed than I am. Michael Futter from Game Informer wrote up an article this morning about how he really thinks this is a whole lot of hullabaloo about not much. He says there's no reason to panic over this move, that Capcom is already in this situation. Namco Bandai is already in the situation. Square Enix is already in the situation, and that the stock is still going to be sold over the counter in the United States, which I don't even understand what that is. But
that means that Ben Affleck from Boiler Room will call you up at the great deal.
David, maybe you know more than I do about this kind of thing. What's your take on this?
Well, it's hard to tell what's going on, but something is going on there, kind of in the upper management of Konami. I have no insight into it, other than it's obvious from the outside that there's a whole bunch of things going on with the company. And I would assume that not all of them are very positive. The fact is that you don't delist yourself when things are going well. and with your star creator leaving and games getting canceled and like all of these kind of things all happening at the same time, there's some I would guess rough times going on at Konami, and there's a bunch of stress and pressure going on, and they are all related somehow. I mean, maybe even not directly, but it all goes to a bigger story, which is that, that Konami has some strange stuff going on.
Yeah, my favorite quote from this article is, Konami's voluntary delisting from the New York Stock Exchange is no reason to panic. everything else Konami is doing is reason to panic. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Christian, what's your feeling about this?
I just question how voluntary it is. I just picture a Solid Snake standing behind Mr. Konami, giving him a chokehold, being like, D-list. It's, unfortunately, I feel it is a representative of the larger issue happening with yesterday's major Japanese game publishing companies. I mean, if you think back to my childhood, that's the dumbest thing. I've said a lot of dumb things. If you think back to, you know, the Silver Age of gaming, whatever you want to call it, Nintendo, Sega, Konami, Capcom, Square, Montreal, whatever they used to be called before they were Eidos Montreal, all of these companies were just, you know, they were the Bash Brothers, right? It was Maguire, and they were slamming them out of the park every day. And now they're just kind of, it appears, limping along and surviving on, for Sega, other cash flows other than games. Konami, maybe it's they're going to only do health clubs and fitness clubs in Japan. Capcom is maybe kind of back, but they had a couple of years of some serious, you know, WTF moments. And I don't know if they have, and this is broad generalizations on my part, but these companies have figured out the shift of gaming from the Japanese-centric market, we rule the world, what we put out is gobbled up, to the Western RPG, the Western third-person shooter, the European racing game. And it's just a very different approach that none of them have handled very well, unfortunately. And I don't know what Kojima is going to do next, if he goes the, you know, Project 9 Kickstarter, Mighty Number 9 Kickstarter route, or, you know, Microsoft gobbles him up or something like that. But it is, we are in a transition point in gaming in many ways, be it the free-to-play or, you know, microtransaction kind of console, PC, whatever, and then also a shift in who are the premier developers, and it's no longer who it used to be.
Well, I certainly don't think that handling that transition involves getting rid of the guy who is synonymous with the most popular game in your library.
If his salary is drowning you.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. It's going to be interesting. It's a bummer. I mean, for me, stock stuff aside, the biggest bummer is Silent Hills really seemed like a cool project. I'm bummed that it's not happening. I'm bummed that it doesn't sound like Guillermo del Toro is going to be involved in any way with any project there. So he's sort of a bystander of this falling out that happened. So I'm bummed. I'm bummed by the whole situation, and it's going to be interesting to see how Konami, you know, Konami is, as you're pointing out, Christian, becoming less and less of a factor in the sort of upper echelon of game companies. And that's not good. I think it's better when we have more companies coming out with great stuff.
I think Del Toro has a bad track record. Wasn't his game
insane? True.
With like Volition, like he joins a company and they go under.
Every time we hear about a big name Hollywood director making a video game, you can pretty much guarantee that a year later it's going to be announced as canceled.
That stinks.
Such a bummer. All right, guys, before we move on, I do need to thank our first sponsor, which is Casper. Casper is an online retailer of mattresses. These are premium mattresses, but they are sold to you for a fraction of the price. The coolest thing about Casper is the way we buy mattresses is dumb. We go into a store and we're thinking about sleeping on this thing for hundreds of hours of our life, spending hundreds of hours of our life laying on this thing. We walk into a store, we lay on it for 5 minutes, we go, it feels pretty good. I'll pay thousands of dollars for this. And then we take it home and a month later, we're not liking it anymore. And that's dumb. Casper is changing that. The reason is Casper is going to let you sleep on it for 100 days before you have to decide one way or the other whether you're going to keep it or not. That's awesome. Casper mattresses are less expensive. They start at $500 for twin size, $600 for twin XL, $750 for a full size, $850 for a queen. It's much less expensive than the thousands and thousands you'll find at mattress stores, and they're delivered right to your door. It makes it super easy. You do it all online. They deliver it to your door, and then you have 100 days to check it out, and sleep on it. I've been sleeping on a Casper mattress. It's super comfortable. They're really nice. The best thing about it is the way it's delivered. It's got a really cool packaging. It gets to your door. You open it up. It unfolds and you have this mattress. And then you think to yourself, well, if in that 100-day period, what if I don't want this mattress anymore? Am I going to have to fold it back up? I didn't keep the crazy box it came in. This is a scam. Aha. No, it's not. They have painless returns. That means if in your 100 days you decide that a Casper mattress is not for you, you contact them, people come to your door and pick it up. You don't have to worry about repackaging. You don't have to worry about sending it back. It's super easy. It's super painless. And guess what? We're going to help you out. We're going to give you $50 toward any mattress purchase just by visiting our custom URL, which is casper.com/DLC. And then use that promo code DLC on checkout. You get $50 toward any mattress purchase. You can check it out for 100 days, see if it's right for you. These are mattresses that are made in America. And they will know that you listen to our show. They will know it's a good idea to support DLC. So check that out. Casper.com, CASPER.com/DLC, and the promo code DLC. Okay, Christian, what is your story of the week?
Oh, man. There's still interesting stuff. To me, the most interesting story has to be the next big dog trotting out this week, and it was the Cod Blobs 3
trailer.
Cod Blobs trailer. Cod Blobs 3 trailer was officially released along with box art, originally showing only on PlayStation. Someone messed up in their Photoshop department and used the wrong PlayStation template. But the trailer was released. It shows a very Deus Ex type approach where who's the weapon, who's the man, who's the machine. And in fact, Deus Ex developers had some fun on Twitter saying welcome to 2010 or something like that and took some pot shots. But the trailer, the graphics look very good. It's PC, Xbox One, PS4 only at the minute. I tweeted out late last night after watching the trailer again. It's very self-serious. Have you watched it, Jeff? Like, this trailer is, we're making the Godfather. Call of Duty.
That's how all of them are, right? That's how all of the Call of Duty trailers are.
I don't know. I remember, and this still had like 70s rock in it. I remember some of them, and maybe this is like Call of Duty 4 way back when, but some of them I feel like were just more fun. Maybe not the debut trailer, but it was just like rock. And then it was like blowing stuff up, guitar riff, rock. And this one was our plot matters, which, that being said, I had several people tweet back at me that Black Ops is the most plot serious entry in Call of Duty. So whatever. But are you excited for this game? Is this getting you hype? Are you going to dive back in to Call of Duty ever, Jeff?
I have to say, I heard about the trailer first from a friend who said, the trailer's not that exciting. And then I watched it, and maybe because my expectations were so low, but I thought it looked really good. I was really cool. I thought it's set in 2065. So this is like far future robots. It's basically, you know, yeah, it's military still, but barely. We're in sci-fi town. Not just near future. We're in, you know, this is full on robots versus humans for the fate of humanity. And that's my language. You're speaking my language now. So I think I might be excited about this, especially because the big reveal was 4-player co-op. And now you're talking Halo territory. Now you're talking get together with some friends and co-op through the campaign. That sounds fun. They're talking about how it's much less on rails, much less corridor shooter, much more wide open, battlefields where, you know, new AI routines allow for a more dynamic battlefield its situation. Now I feel like you're in the kinds of first person shooters that I'm still getting jazzed about. So this could be the cool stuff.
But then my question to David or someone with a little bit of experience doing things for real and not just talking BS out of their mouths for years, a la me. I mean, how do you do that? How do you bridge that gap and say you're going to have this 4-player co-op campaign experience when you see the trailer and it's still epic explosion? Like, how do four of us trigger that thing and see that thing and then see all four of our dudes jumping from the same helicopter?
You've played Halo?
It doesn't have those.
4-player co-op?
It doesn't have
it
those.
It does.
No, it has like a scarab get dropped and then you're like, oh, I'm in a sandbox. Let's go kill the scarab. It doesn't have, I mean, some Warthoggy moments, but not Call of Duty moments. Come on.
David, are you a Call of Duty fan?
I am. I've played quite a few of them. I think that, you know, it looks, I personally, I didn't know that the trailer was out, actually. I don't know how I missed this, but the, but so I'm going to go look and watch it after this. But the, you know, I think that when it comes to trailer making trailers, it oftentimes you have to manage what features you're going to show or what's going to happen. And you're trying to create a vibe and you have good looking graphics and things like that, because that's going to get the buzz more than making sure that we're showing off this kind of feature for the kind of core audience. Right. Because a lot of the core audience you're going to have already, but you're just trying to build enthusiasm for your product. And the way that you do that most is through trailers that have explosions and look good. So I think right. that there may be questions that come out of it, but the questions won't really be answered until the product is, you know, much closer.
I will say this. You haven't seen the trailer yet, but I would say that if you watched the trailer without knowing what game was being marketed, you would not think it was a Call of Duty game. I would think it was a sci-fi shooter of some other brand. And I got to say, that kind of makes me excited. Like, I like the fact that these games are finding their own identity that isn't just retreading the same thing over and over. It's still going to be a shooter. It's still going to be high octane. It's still going to have, you know, cool weapons and a big emphasis on multiplayer. But I have traditionally really enjoyed the Call of Duty single player experience. And the fact that I can play that in co-op is probably going to bring me back to this franchise. I did not play last year's installment at all, even though I heard it was really good. I just didn't have room for it in my life anymore. But this might be what brings me back. Like, that's what I'm looking for out of a first-person shooter, is that fun Borderlands or Halo-esque co-op shooting experience.
And I know what you said, but it sounded funny where you were like, I really enjoyed the single-player experience, and now that I can play that with friends.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean. Campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, those are big stories of the week, guys. I would like to bring my story of the week up as another Marvel tie-in. We got news that Telltale is making a Marvel game. Now, we don't know anything about this Marvel game. We know it's coming in 2017, so not near. But these are the guys that made Walking Dead, Wolf Among Us, Tales from Borderlands, Game of Thrones. So it seems like Telltale's getting in on all the cool IP. The question is, what Marvel character or group of characters or title do we want this to be? Because now we don't know anything about this. We just know it's a Marvel thing. David, you are an expert of Marvel characters. If you could have an adventure game with any Marvel character, what would you want it to be?
Well, my personal favorite is, I would love to see more Guardian stuff. And that was even before the movie. I'm a big cosmic fan or whatever. I loved like Annihilation Wave and thinking, you know, War Kings and stuff. So the, so
give me Quasar. I want Quasar.
Yeah. It would be great to see a whole bunch of stuff. Anyway, the point is that, you know, I would love to see that direction. I honestly don't have any more information than you guys do on this. But, you know, I'm looking forward to it in general, because I think that they do a really good job with that kind of episodic storytelling kind of game. And I think that that's right up Marvel's alley, right? That matches so well. And so I think that I'm excited to see what they come up with.
Christian, what's your wish project for this to turn out to be?
My wish project is that it's more akin to Wolf Among Us and less akin to Game of Thrones, where I want to be playing like Marvel Heroes does. I want to be playing as a Marvel hero. I don't want to be playing as Vision's assistant navigating a world.
Gary, the guy who hangs out with the Avengers.
Yeah, or even someone that like, I don't want to be Foggy, right? I don't want to be solving law cases and then Matt shows up bruised and it's like, Matt, are you hurt? Matt will remember that. Like, I don't know. that's not what I'm looking for. But I understand it's hard to, you know, have you be Peter Parker or something like that and then have Gwen Stacy die in the game, maybe. It's a difficult thing of, you're either rehashing stories we know, or you can't kill Eddie Brock yet. He doesn't die. You know, it's like that weird thing if you're a mainline hero in a narrative focused game. But if I had to choose, I would like to be a, oh, never mind. I just, as I was babbling, I want to play X-Men First Class. The current new old X-Men where they time traveled and they're in, not, it's not First Class. What are they called? The original X-Men. That's the story I want to play.
First Class. That's cool. That's cool. I mean, I think an actual Avengers game would be pretty rad if it was like all Telltale style and it's just talking and wandering around. I mean, kind of awesome. I kind of would love that. But here's my prediction. Here's my actual prediction of what this actually is. I think it's going to shock everybody. I think it's the Runaways. I think that's what they're doing.
But that would make sense.
Right? It feels like that's the property that fits most in their style. I think it's going to, if, The downside to that is it would disappoint a lot of people who heard a Marvel project is coming and it's like, oh, it's not any of the superheroes that I love. But I really feel like Runaways would be perfect. It would introduce some really interesting heroes that I think a lot of the mainstream audience doesn't know about. And it has that very perfect tone for what their kinds of games are. So that's my prediction anyway. Let's hit a couple of other quick stories before we move on. Looks like we're getting a Gears of War remaster coming to Xbox One. Christian, you wanted to talk about that. Are you excited for slightly prettier Gears of War?
At some point, that rumor is where there's smoke, there's fire, right? And that rumor keeps coming back. And Black Tusk said, we're not making a Marcus Phoenix collection, so they're just going to call it the Gears of War trilogy. I don't mind seeing these things. I hope if it does come out, I hope the netcode works, and I hope it's not a Master Chief collection debacle. I hope that it doesn't delay the next proper Gears intrigue. I've always enjoyed the Gears franchise. I don't think it is. I have a feeling it's not being handled, you know, by the studio. It looks like the rumor is that it's Brink and Smash Damage is working on the remaster, and Polygon has seen some multiplayer screenshots and seen some intro movie stuff. So I think we can expect this thing to come out at or to be revealed at E3. And unfortunately, I think what the publishers and they've been messing up this generation is the pricing of this thing. If this thing is like the God of War 3 remaster that's coming out at a close to, if not full price, I think that's a miss. I think if this thing launches at $40, I probably will double dip on those games. They were some of my favorite from last gen, but there's a lot of ifs before that happens.
Yeah, I think that we're more likely to get a new Gears announcement at E3 than a Gears remaster. I think, I don't know.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, go ahead.
I was to say, I think they're going to try to come out with guns blazing and say, we need to amp up the Xbox One's must have status. And I think that would be I don't think it's coming this year, but I think it's going to be announced at E3 that there's more Gears coming to Xbox One.
I think there's both. The way I would do this is I would announce the remaster first, and everyone's like, oh, yawn, expected. And that as the end of that, it says, and learn the story that leads into dun 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 dun. And then they do a big, you know, Gears 4, whatever they call it, thing. And everybody's like going crazy. And then it says coming 2017 asterisk, really 2018 asterisk, coming for the Xbox 2.
David, you got any feelings about this one?
Yeah, I'm all in favor of remastering great games. So that, I think that keeping them fresh and keeping them around is something that you know, appeals to me. In a lot of ways, I wish I could remaster Diablo 2. Right? I would love to see that updated someday.
What would you do? I'm fascinated by this. Would you just a graphic upgrade, or would you actually fiddle with game mechanics?
I would try not to fiddle with many of the mechanics. I would try. Maybe I would fiddle with removing the stamina bar and just letting you run all the damn time. But other than that, I don't think that would mess with much. I would just, you know, give it a graphic update so it's relevant today.
That's interesting. Wow. Let's figure out a way to make that happen. That would be awesome. very cool. Also, Christian, I know you're excited because your Xbox One took a nosedive. Are you going to wait for that Halo 5 branded Xbox One? Are you going to get that?
again, if the pricing's right, I feel like they're going to do something smart with it. I bet it will look cool. I bet it will have a terabyte drive or something larger than the standard and come bundled with the game. That could be the thing that gets me back in, other than a price drop or a sweet, sweet bundle. My question to you guys is, and Jeff, I don't think you have bought these limited edition consoles. Who do you guys think buys most of these? Is it people that have waited and this gets them in? Or do you think it's multi-console owners, super fans that gobble these things up?
David, you want to answer that?
Honestly, I think that it's a little bit of both. I think that there are, but the subset of people that are buying multiple consoles and are, you know, big fans of it, it's tiny. And that mainly this is are people that, I can, you know, they're getting the bundle. I don't know if they're getting it for the actual, you know, graphic look or whatever of the box, but it's the, this is the opportunity. This is the thing that's selling them. They're going to buy this package now, and because this is the game that their killer app or whatever you want to call it, that's going to push them over the fence to get this thing.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think there's a smaller group that buys it as collector's editions, but I don't think that is the majority of people that buy them. It's the people who are like, the reason I would buy an Xbox One is if Halo 5 came out on it. Oh, there's Halo 5 coming out on it, and it's bundled with this Xbox One, and it looks cool because it has a cool Halo 5 thing, which is the thing I already like, which is the reason I would want to get this. I don't know. It's all that. Or it's people whose Xbox One's broke, and they're waiting for some sort of new bundle,
man.
And their
Too
name
soon.
Is Christian Spicer.
Too yeah. soon.
All right, we got a lot of cool stuff to talk about. Also, I forgot to mention at the top, this is going to be a special huge bonus edition. You probably noticed if you downloaded this episode, it's a lot longer than normal. I got some interviews at the Heroes of the Dorm, and we're going to stick them on the end of this episode. So bully for you guys, you get extra bonus cool content at the end. So stay tuned for that also. But right now we gotta talk about games. We gotta talk about the playlist.
Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist.
David, I know that in addition to your own game, Marvel Heroes 2015, you have been playing some other stuff. What's on your playlist?
I missed kind of the Hearthstone craze for the most part until now. It's come to my phone, and now I'm deep in it here. I've been playing a lot of Hearthstone on my phone, which is, it's just really convenient for me because I travel a lot, and it's an easy thing to have around and when I'm waiting on whatever. So I've been playing that. Then I also have been playing a little of the City Skylines which I like. I love SimCity type games, and
yeah.
So I think that they did a great job with this one. It's really good. I'm having a good time with that.
I've heard such great things about City Skylines, and I know that people were saying it's the game everybody wanted the last SimCity to be. What has been your experience with it? Is it scratching that same itch, or does it carve out its own little niche?
It fills the void that has been missing for a while. I mean, it's kind of an updated version in a lot of ways of the old SimCity stuff. It plays very similarly, but it's got, you know, the way that the landscapes work and the curved roads and all the bridges, things like that, and all these different buildings you can make and whatnot. I think that it's definitely scratching the itch that already existed, but it's done it in a really smooth and very, you know, excellent way. I think that it's a smooth experience and easy to play and fun.
It's super incredible. I've seen some YouTube videos of people who recreated San Francisco, almost to scale. It's crazy.
Yeah.
The game looks awesome.
Yeah, it's an amazing product to be able to do things like that. It's incredible.
Go ahead, Christian.
I'll say a friend and real life friend and listener to this show, Jeff Wood has a podcast. It's called Talking Headways Podcast, and he did an episode with the lead designer of Cities Skylines. That episode is called We Built This City on Transit and Roads. It's interesting if people are more interested in that. Jeff does transit stuff in real life, and so it's diving into that kind of approach of what is this game and public transit, and then they talk about new features coming to the game and stuff like that. So Talking Headways, they dive into that game in depth.
So David, what is your favorite class to play in Hearthstone?
So far, I think that I'm still going through the, you know, the initial missions where you have to unlock all of the, you know, the different classes, and you have to play each one like, I don't know, 20 times or something like that.
Oh, you are brand new to it, aren't you? That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's
cool. Brand new to it. And so I've completed Mage and Paladin and Hunter and Warrior and Rogue so far, and so I still have Shaman and some others or whatever to go. I think Paladin, I really like I played Paladin in World of Warcraft, and I really like it. But the games are long.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, it plays just like a Paladin would in World of Warcraft, where they're kind of, they're really tough to beat because they keep coming back basically from the dead. So I enjoyed that, but the games are much longer. I've enjoyed Mage, I think, the most, though. Just being able to, you know, blow things up is always fun.
That's awesome. It's crazy to me that it just needed to be on the phone for you to get into it. It just needed to be able to take it with you.
Yeah, that was the big thing. I mean, I have an iPad, but I don't bring my iPad with me all over the place. So, the fact that it's convenient and I'm able to use it on my phone, and when I sit down to play games on my computer, I end up playing other things that, for lack of better description, it's no insult, it seems too casual for me to play on my computer for me, but it seems perfect for my phone. And I don't know why, this is my own personal, experience with that. When I play computer games, I wanted something complex, and you know, it seems like it's very complicated, though. So I had the wrong impression; it just felt that way.
Yeah, no, it's interesting to me to hear that that perspective, because I just assumed that the phone version of Hearthstone was sort of preaching to the choir already. You know, was feeding the people that already had the addiction. But it's interesting to see that it actually has opened up the player base even more to people that hadn't played it until it was on the phone. So that's pretty interesting. What other stuff have you got on your playlist?
Well, I recently been playing a lot of, this is kind of old for a lot of people now, but I had not played it before, which was Don't Starve. And I really enjoyed that fantastic game. And then I've also been playing MLB 15, the show. I love the create your own character and take them from the minors to the road to the show, I think is what they call it or whatever. It's basically the RPG in the baseball game, which is just right up my alley. I love sports games in general and sports in general. So, and baseball is my favorite sport. And for you to be able to create a character, I always create like knuckleball pitchers and stuff like that. They're really quirky. And so, I've been playing that a lot. I love those games.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Don't Starve. Are you playing that solo, or you know, they have the Don't Starve Together?
Yeah, I think the Don't Starve Together, I don't know if it's officially released. It was kind of in beta or something like that. So I've only been playing it solo.
Very, very cool. That's awesome. Christian, how about you? What's on your playlist?
So with my Xbox dead and, well, no, whatever, it doesn't matter. I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago we talked about how I think a game like Batman is to some extent harder, or combat is difficult in the same way that Bloodborne is, and it's watching and looking and moving. And now that I have my tower back, my PC back that had been using as a render machine mostly, I have dove back in, and also the hype train for Arkham Knight is, it's barreling down the tracks, you guys. It's coming. It's so soon. I fired up Arkham Origins, which I never finished. I'm very, very close now. And I know that that game got a lot of flack when it came out for being more of the same, and it certainly launched with some bugs and glitches where you'd get stuck in an elevator and things didn't work right. But coming back to that game now after having not finished it and diving back in and really craving that Batman combat again, it's still so satisfying. Playing on hard without, so it gets rid of the, you know, spidey sense over the villain's heads when you need to press Y or whatever control you're using to block. And you just get into this large group of enemies, and the rhythm that you get into with that game when everything is clicking, it feels so good. And I don't think any other game combat has matched that yet. And I really, really hope Arkham Knight continues that and doesn't get too far away with the Batmobile and stuff. And I still really like Bloodborne's combat, but in my opinion, Bloodborne, because enemies deal so much damage, each individual enemy is deadly. So it's the lure a guy away with the pebble, parry around, you know, be wary of your environment, and then take down the dude and move on to the next dude. Whereas Batman, it's kind of, it's almost The Walking Dead, right? Where one guy is whatever, a pushover, easy. But they throw these hordes of dudes or five, six dudes on you where one will attack while you're fighting another guy. And you get into this rhythm of combat that one makes you feel like Batman and two is just visceral in a way that not gory like Mortal Kombat, which we played last Thursday as well, which is holy moly gory. But yeah, if you haven't checked it out, it's super cheap yet. And if you also are getting hyped for Arkham Knight, it's an easy way to go in and get your Batman fix. And especially if you missed it when it came out because of the bugs, it seems to be playing very well for me now on PC, and I'm really enjoying it. Did you ever go back and finish that game, Jeff? I know you were kind of the same camp.
Yeah, no, I did not. I'm now that you have a PC and you're able to play PC games, I really want you to play Hand of Fate. You got to try that game, dude.
Oh, it's on PlayStation.
Oh, it is?
Mm-hmm. That's the card game Batman. And then you go in and fight.
Yes.
Yeah, it's on PSN. So I have it. It's on Vita too. I haven't played it, but I have it downloaded, and I just haven't.
You got to try that game. I think you're gonna the combat is not as refined as an Arkham game, but it's in that same vein. And I think if you like it, you'll like it. For the same reasons. And while it's not quite there, it's still close enough that it's still really fun. And the farther you get into it, the more layers they add onto the encounters. So things get more and more interesting in a way that's different from the way they got interesting in Batman games. Like there's more things to deal with. There'll be environmental things that'll pop up that you'll have to avoid and different, counters that the enemies are doing or things they're throwing at you. It's pretty cool. And the presentation of that world is awesome. Anyway.
I have it. I will. The part that struck me there, though, is the combat's not quite as refined. Let's be honest. One, Arkham Origins, I think, is the tightest Arkham story of any of those games yet. It's very simple, but I like that. But that the combat being as tight as it is what keeps me coming back. It's the reason that I was, top 100 on leaderboards back in the day on, I think it was Arkham City. Like that just clicks for me. It's almost a rhythm game when everything's going right and you're reading the flow of the dudes and you feel like the knight.
I've been playing a game on iOS called Does Not Commute. Have you guys heard of this? It's pretty great. It is, it's a top down map of a city, and it starts out and you have a little car in the city driving through the city and you need to get from point A to point B. And it's not very complicated. You maybe drive forward, turn right, turn left and go to the top of the screen. And you start at the bottom of the screen and you need to get to the top of the screen. And you're driving around a house and driving down the street, whatever. And it says, oh, Judy needs to get to work. She's late. And you take her to work. And then you did that. And then it throws another person at you. Tim needs, forgot to take the garbage to the dump. So he needs to take the garbage to the dump and he's in a dump truck and he needs to go from the bottom of the screen to the upper left. So you take Tim from the bottom right to the upper left, but it goes back in time and layers Tim on top of what you did with Judy. And then you get to the third person and they're layering and layering and layering on top. So you're creating this complicated web of people negotiating traffic and you're doing it to yourself. So if you make them go through the same intersection at the same time, you're going to cause an accident with yourself later. So it's got this crazy time travel-esque mechanic where you got to plan ahead. Okay, well, that guy needs to get around that corner really fast. And so I need to have this person have a wide berth around the corner to make room in advance for the next person. Although you don't know what's coming. And you're doing this all against a clock. So you're using up time as a resource. You have a rewind button. If you get into a sticky situation, you can rewind, but that costs a second from your time. The aesthetic is really charming. It's got this kind of like 50s old car culture aesthetic, and it is wickedly addictive because it's got that just one more round kind of thing, because when you'll have these 15 people that need to get to places all layered on top of one another, and then the last person will get to the next screen and just start the next group of 15 people that you need to get to someplace. It's free, but barely free. It's basically $2 because there are no saves in the free version. You'd have to start at the very beginning every play session, which basically makes the game unplayable at a certain point. You can replay that first level only so many times before you want to kill yourself. So it's basically $2. And I think the fact that it's free is a little bit of a misnomer. But I recommend this game. It's called Does Not Commute. And it drives you crazy because you are creating your own chaos, which is really, really fun. The one thing I left out is the way the cars handle is sort of purposely difficult and unwieldy. And you have a left and a right turn on the either side of your device, either your iPad or your iPhone. And it's left and right in relation to where the car is pointed. So you get yourself in these crazy situations where you forget which way is left and right. And it's just a recipe for chaos that is pretty fun. I really like it. Does Not Commute is what it's called.
What are you playing it on? Did you say? I might have missed it. Are you playing on your phone?
I'm playing
or
on my iPad. But I think it would be good on the phone. The other thing I wanted to talk about was the fact that I spent all day yesterday at the Heroes of the Dorm finals, which was the big competition for Heroes of the Storm, with college kids competing to earn their tuition for the rest of their college careers. And it was this live esports thing. It was on ESPN2. The finals were on ESPN2. I went all day and watched the final four, which they called the Heroic Four, and then watched the finals at night. It was great, man. It was great. I am in the past, I think people heard me back in the Weekend Confirmed days, maybe be not as enthusiastic about esports, but I have come around. Being in that auditorium with that crowd, watching those kids play, it was as thrilling to me as any sporting event I've ever been to. I've been to football, basketball, hockey. I've been to the Super Bowl. I've been to professional wrestling, you know, and while all those were thrilling, none of them surpassed the moments of excitement that I had last night watching these kids play a video game in front of hundreds of people screaming for them. It was kudos to the game. I mean, obviously I'm very into this game. I have talked about it many times. I love Heroes of the Storm. So I understand what's going on a very deep level on the screen. And I think that maybe people who weren't as into the game might not enjoy it as much as I. And I probably wouldn't enjoy other esports as much as I enjoyed this one, but I would find it difficult to believe anybody watching would not understand and get at least some thrill out of watching it. It was thrilling. It was such a back and forth. The final was UC Berkeley versus Arizona State. UC Berkeley had not dropped a single game. Most of the matches are best of three games. The final was best of five. They had not dropped a single game on their road to the finals and were completely dominant, just crushing people. They get to the finals. It goes to a fifth game. They drop their first ever game and then their second ever game. The matches are back and forth, coming from behind, down. It was as amazing. It was like you would write a sporting event, how you would want it to turn out. It was underdog moves and crazy brilliant plays and wild strategies. And it just was so, so thrilling. And kudos to them for handling it so well as far as the presentation. I thought, you know, I have some complaints about how ESPN broadcast the event. I thought, I wish there had been more discussion of like the individual talents that the players were selecting. I think that's an interesting part of the game, but they probably didn't want to overcomplicate it to, you know, the mainstream audience. And also they would show up these graphics. They'd put up a graphic of like Diablo and list out all his skills. You know, it'd be like shadow assault and lightning breath. And it's like, well, that doesn't give any information to anybody. It's like the name of their talent. It doesn't help anybody. It just looks like video games gibberish. And I think they could have done a better way of handling that. But there was one moment in the early games when ASU was actually playing against Boston College, and the Boston College kids were the underdogs there. The ASU on their bracket side were heavily favored and had been pretty dominant as well. And Boston College was on their way to winning a game, and they showed this camera shot they had like little webcams mounted on each of the PCs so they could cut to the shots of the actual players. And this kid, this college kid, was sitting there like knowing that it was time to attack the core, which is how you win. And he's bopping up and down in his chair. And they don't have a mic on him, but you can read his lips. And he's going, core, 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 core. And I swear to God, I got tears in my eyes, man. It was like, it was thrilling to see this kid so jazzed and so excited about potentially winning. It was an amazing event. And I was so pleased to be there. And like I said, at the end of this episode, you're going to hear some interviews that I had with some of the designers of Heroes of the Storm, which was really cool, too. So we'll paste those on the end of this episode. But David, how do you feel about esports? Do you think that they have a chance to enter the mainstream? I mean, ESPN2 is pretty mainstream.
Yeah, I think they already have entered the mainstream.
You're right.
I think that they're going to become more and more popular as time goes on. I mean, the fact is that gaming's not going away. Gaming is, and people that are participating in esports, they're younger now, but they'll get older, and 20 years from now, they'll be making the decisions of what to put on ESPN, It will be esports, right? So it's not going away. There's plenty of money involved in it. There's lots of support, and I think that it's awesome, not only for gaming, but it's just really as any kind of gaming fan or sporting fan at all. I think that it's wonderful.
Christian, did you flip on any of this last night at any point?
I did not. No, I wasn't interested, just in the same way I don't watch hockey, but I'm glad it went well.
It was phenomenal. I think that it couldn't have been more thrilling. Like, it went to the fifth and final decisive game, and that game was back and forth, and you didn't know who was going to win at any point. I mean, it really was tremendous. It was tremendous. Anyway. Hopefully people saw my tweets last night about it. And I posted a picture of, like, at the end, they had all this confetti coming down. It made it feel like an event, which it should. And I know people have been to the international and talk about Dota and that I only peripherally paid attention to in the past. And this is sort of the game that I'm more interested in. So I guess I paid more attention to it, but I'm on board now, man. I'm on board. I get it. All right. Well, I guess that's what I wanted to contribute to the playlist. So let's carve out a little bit of tabletop time.
Tabletop time. Right now.
I am so excited to have a guest on the show that plays board games. But first, I do need to thank our second sponsor, which is Hover. Hover is a domain name service. When you have a great idea and you want to secure the domain name for it, you want something catchy and you want something memorable and you want something that represents your online identity. And with Hover, you can find the perfect domain to bring your idea to life. It's easy. You just search for the domain you want, enter a few keywords, and Hover will show you the best available options and suggestions. So you don't have to rack your brain and keep finding out that everything's taken. They will show you a variety of things with a variety of domain extensions like .com, .net, .io, country codes that best suit your needs. They got you covered. You'll get smart control panel with built-in DNS, and you can even add a custom email or Google Apps if you want as well. Hover offers a valet transfer service to make it as easy as possible to move your domains for no additional cost, and they do all the dirty work to move your domain over from your current registrar. Top it all off, Hover has real human beings available for support with no wait, no hold, no transfer phone service. If you've got any problems, just pick up the phone and call them. So head over to hover.com/5x5. That's hover.com/5x5 to learn more and get the domain of your dreams. We thank Hover for supporting 5x5. That's hover.com/5x5. David, you are a board gamer like I am. It's in your Twitter profile, so I know it's got to be real. I'm excited about that. Tell me about some board games you've been playing.
I have a ridiculous amount of board games at home. And we play a lot. I play with my kids and stuff too. But awesome. We just got our new gaming table, our custom geek chic gaming table. So,
oh my God, I'm so jealous.
We've ordered like a year ago or something like that. It's been very exciting to have it in the house. And And my favorite board game of all time is Arkham Horror. And so we've been playing that, you know, set that up and been going through that. It takes a long time to set up and play through it. So it's easy to cover it up and then, you know, have it there and then uncover it and continue. So that was the number one thing I wanted to buy it for, so I can have a game of Arkham Horror going at any time. So we've been playing that. And then
let's just explain, if anybody doesn't know what Arkham Horror is, it's a massive Cthulhu themed H.P. Lovecraft themed cooperative game where you're trying to literally save the planet from these horrific Cthulhu-esque creatures coming through portals. And it is a massive game with tons of fiddledy bits, a gigantic board. And it's very difficult. It's very difficult to win that game.
Yeah. And lots of rules.
Yes.
Yeah. It is very complicated, but very ultimately when you win, very rewarding. I've only won a few times, but we played many. It's very difficult.
Do you prefer Arkham Horror to Eldritch Horror?
I mean, we have both, but Eldritch Horror is usually what I introduce people to earlier than I would introduce them to Arkham Horror, it's because it's kind of a lighter version of the same thing. And a little bit streamlined. So, I enjoy them both, but I when I really want to get super nerdy and geeky, it's just like, I've got to get to that base level super complexity of Arkham Horror.
Awesome. So what else have you been playing?
Let's see, with the gaming group last week, we played Flashpoint, which is, a firefighter game, which I didn't think, would be great, but, it is really fun. We really enjoyed that a lot. You're going in as firefighters and fighting, there's little blazes throughout of structure and you have to go rescue people and bring them out to the ambulance. And there's a fire truck that you can drive around the outside and hose down parts. And anyway, it's quite interesting and very different kind of gaming experience than it's so many games are this fantasy thing or this sci-fi thing or whatever. And for it to be fighting fires is something that's very, very different.
Yeah. I own Flashpoint Fire Rescue as well. It's very cool. And it is definitely that game that you can bring out to people that might not be interested in, orcs and dragons and space pistols and all that stuff. Right. They get it. They understand the concept. You know, you got to put out the fire and save the puppy inside the building.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I completely agree. Yeah, we don't start people out with Zia, for instance, that thing.
right. And you've also been playing Love Letter, you said?
Yeah, that's a really casual but very fun game. It's super, super simple, but the amount of combinations and strategy and all sorts of fun things that come out of it, it's a very social game. We've enjoyed that game a lot. Super simple, it's not very expensive. There's only, I don't know, like 13 cards or something like that. I don't even know if they're that many. But just a fantastic, fantastic game. Lots of strategies, lots of tricking that you can go on to, and every game is different.
Yeah. And Christian, they're making Love Letter Batman.
Oh, I know. Was that with you? Or maybe it was with, Chris, our friend Chris. We looked at it and, the pre-order information or whatever it was. I'm excited. I realize it's a silly cash-in, but you got it.
It's a little weird that, Batman is writing love letters to his villains, but, I'll allow it. I'll allow it. And David, the game that you mentioned that I'm most excited about, because I have not had a chance to play this yet, is the DICE version of Pandemic.
Right, yeah. Pandemic, The Cure, the DICE version. That's really fun. It's a great game. I think that the first time we played it, it was ridiculously easy. Like the easy mode is because Pandemic is probably well known as it's a cooperative game. This game is cooperative as well, but it's super difficult, right?
Yeah.
But this one seemed like, there was no challenge at all. We played it twice on the easy mode and it wasn't that hard. But then, we started, there are different levels of difficulty that you can kind of set the game at. And we set it the last time on the hardest level, and it was hard. So it was much more stressful than it had been in the past, and we enjoyed it a lot more. So I recommend, if you're familiar with Pandemic, you play it kind of on that harder level. You get the first game, you should play just to get to know it on that easy one, but but ratchet up the difficulty.
So explain to me how the dice mechanic works, because in Pandemic, you're running around the planet, the globe, trying to squash out these diseases. Are the dice working as sort of a resource for you to use up on your moves?
No, they're the disease themselves. So there's kind of this ring in the middle. Everybody has different character classes. So that's first part. So there's, I don't know, let's say 10 different character classes, and you randomly choose them. And then they have a specific set of dice that goes with that character class. And there's different things that you can do. Some of them are based on, oh, I'm the transport guy, I'm the cure person, I'm the research person. There's like, there's different mechanics for each one of the, and then there's this ring in the center, and then there's six platforms around the outside. And the dice are, the disease dice are, there's four different colors, and you're trying to cure all four diseases. And you randomly reach in this bag and you pull out a certain amount of dice, 4 to 6 or 7 dice, something like that. And you roll them, and what that rolls up to kind of goes to the six different platforms around the outside. And then if you have more than 3 of a particular color on one of those little platforms, then an outbreak occurs, and then lots more dice come in. And then the mechanic is kind of, you take these dice and you move them into the center, and then you can either take them as a sample, or you can try and cure the disease by using the samples that you collect. When you collect a sample, your dice gets set aside with that particular sample, and so now the dice that you use to actually do your moves with, and your character, you're diminished by 1. So like, you have to take enough samples so that your total of sample rolls, you have, let's say, 4 sample rolls. That means that you get to roll 4 dice, and the total of needs to add up to more than 13 or something like that. So as you're trying to cure it, you're kind of limiting the amount of moves that you can make with your particular character and stuff. So lots of strategy involved in who's taking what and how to get those samples to get that score to cure the disease.
Crazy. That sounds awesome. It sounds very different than Pandemic, which is, it's cool. It's not that they just remade it with dice. It's got its own flavor.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's similar and different.
That's awesome. Oh man, I'm just jealous of you rolling those dice on that awesome Geek Chic table. Every time I go to a convention, every time I go to PAX, there's always the Geek Chic tables, and I'm always like coveting them. Someday I will own one. Christian, you have been playing some board games with your daughter.
She has taken the plunge in the board gaming world. She is 2.5. So the first game we played was actually Ticket to Ride. And she... No, I'm just kidding.
Should have went with Arkham Horror.
She was a real natural. I don't know if that was impressive or disturbing. She has a little animal game of memory, which she's really good at. 50% of the time, the other percent of the time, she'll turn it over and she'll just go, cow, and then get real happy. And just like, that's kind of the end of the game. And then she also has a game called Count Your Chickens, which is, let's be honest, these aren't, these are edutainment and actually not even much tainment. They're more just educational game. It's a cooperative game where you're spinning a little dial and it lands on an animal, and that's how many pieces on those animals are also on the board, and that's where you move you're the mother chicken, and all these little baby chickens are out of the coop, and they have to get back home to their coop before the mother chicken gets home, who you are advancing. So you spin the little thing, and let's say you get a cow, you move the mother chicken to the cow piece, but however many spaces that is, that's how many baby chickens you put back in the coop. So you keep adding chickens into the coop unless your spinner lands on the fox. Which
gets, I think we've already talked about this too long.
No. Which gets to adorable moments of a 2.5-year-old going, don't get fox, no one get fox, which is really funny out of a 2.5-year-old's mouth, where it sometimes doesn't sound like fox.
I bet. Highly recommend, she might be a little young yet, but look into Haba Games. Haba, yes, is a company that makes games for little kids, and there's some really great ones.
We have discussed that. We will. You and I also played a real game known as Masquerade.
Yes, we did. A Bruno Fiduti game. He's the guy who designed Citadels and Ink and Gold, which are two excellent games as well. This is a game that came out a couple years ago, and it is pretty rad. It's basically a role selection game. You have a bunch of roles, 13 of them come in the box. You can play up to 13 people, which is very rare in designer board games to play that many people. And you're basically trying to acquire gold. The first person to get to 13 gold wins. And the way you do that is by activating the role that you have on your card. So basically, if your card says king, you can get a bunch of gold. Or if your card says thief, you can steal gold from another player. There's a whole, every card has its own function, way to get gold. The trick is that you get your role and then you flip it over. And then the first four turns of the game, people switch roles with each other without looking at the cards. So you take the card, you put it underneath the table with somebody else's card, and you give them back one of the cards, and they don't know which one they got back. So at a certain point, nobody knows who they are exactly. And then through the course of the game, you have three options. You can look at your card to find out who you are, but that uses up your turn. You can switch cards with somebody else, again, under the table without them knowing whether they got back a new card or the same card. Or you can activate the role on the card. And you can activate the role on the card without necessarily knowing that you actually have that card. And then if somebody else says, wait, you don't have that card, I have that card, then there's a challenge, and both people flip over their cards and you find out who was telling the truth and who wasn't. And the loser has to give up some gold and the winner gets to activate the card. So it works out like this wonderful bluffing game, and bluffing in the sense of maybe you do know what you've got and you're bluffing, or bluffing in the sense of nobody knows what I've got. And so I'm giving it a shot. Here we go. Let's see if I have it. Wild and fun. What did you think of it, Christian?
It was a lot of fun. I mean, you described it, I think, best when we were playing, as you were literally laughing with glee, and you must have said this five times in the middle of our game, where you kept going, it's like that scene in Princess Bride! And it really is.
Yeah.
Where
I clearly can't take the one in front of me. Yeah.
Yep.
It is that.
Yeah. It's that scenario over and over and over and over again. And it plays into Jeff's favorite type of game of lying, even though Jeff is a horrible board game liar. And
it
plays
liar.
into my strength of game, fake overconfidence, where I think I've got it all figured out, and boy, do I not. I did not do well, but it was enjoyable, and it's a quick play. We also had a friend stop by and give us a quick rundown. We played with the minor rule variant, which changed it a little bit, where after you know what your card is, you put a little you mark it so that you can't just keep playing the same thing over and over and over again. You basically have to shuffle, because otherwise you can get locked into a thing of the person with the best card just keeps playing it and no one can call BS on them because you know they have it. So I think that variant helped, and it certainly helped, as always, to have someone explain the game in 2 minutes versus you looking at the rule book going, I don't know.
Yes, always good to have a teacher. But this is a game that's I think less than $20, and they already have an expansion out for it that adds even more cards and even more roles. The roles are pretty clever. As I said, there's 13 of them, and they all work a little differently. But it's a game that I think could work as an intro to new gamers, but it's the kind of thing where, like, okay, here's how to play, and now you don't know anything. So I think there's a speed bump there that's built into the game intentionally that might throw off some people that aren't used to playing hobby games. But if you can get over that speed bump, if you can just kind of settle into understanding and get through one round of it, people kind of figure it out. But it is that kind of thing where it's like, okay, so remember all that stuff I told you? Now you have no information upon which to make your decisions. So have fun. And people can be, off put by that, but I think it's certainly worth it. It's called Masquerade, and it's from Bruto Fiduti, and it's published by Repos Games, I think it's called. I have it here looking at it right now. I went out and bought it after we played it, so I'm excited to play it to see if it works with 13 people, because that seems like a really fun, crazy number of people. But it might slow down to the point where it's not fun at that point, so we'll see. I will report back. Christian, you also got Splendor for your mother-in-law?
It was her birthday yesterday, and you had brought Splendor over and introduced it to Amanda and I, and Amanda loved it. I think it's because she picked up on it very quickly. I mean, it's not the hardest game to understand, but yeah, we got that for her, and we started to fire it up yesterday, but ended up being that parents were tired. But we will give it another go, and this will be there. They love board games and play. I don't know what the word is. They're not designer games per se, but it's not certainly Monopoly or anything like that either, where they get into classic old games, and of course cribbage is a stalwart in that family, as well as I'll send you links, Jeff, because otherwise it's me rambling trying to explain what they are. But I wouldn't call them designer games in the sense of the games that we play, but they're also not Monopoly. I'll link them and we can talk about it next week.
Sounds good. All right. As I said, we got much more content coming for you at the end of this episode. We do have our parting gift, and we also have two big interviews coming, so stay tuned. But we do need to wrap up. This has been an awesome episode. I've really enjoyed having David Brevik on the show. Thank you, David, for being here. Where can people find out more about your game and what you're up to?
First off, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. And it was fun for me too. You can go find Marvel Heroes at marvelheroes.com. That's Marvel Heroes 2015 and download it there. It's for PC and Mac. And then, if they want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at David Brevik. And, I stream the game as well, several nights a week. And so if they want to follow that or check out a stream, watch me play with the community and stuff, we're at on Twitch at The Jungle Queen.
Awesome. The Jungle Queen. Very
that's
cool.
That's my wife's account, and we stream together. So that's
oh, how neat. Wow, that's cool, man. Playing board games with your kids, streaming games with your wife. Yeah, you got to figure it out, man. You got to figure it out. That's cool.
I'm very lucky.
We got a mighty one in the chat is saying there's no HOTS primer today. But guess what? There's an hour of HOTS coverage coming up after we wrap this show. So stay tuned for that. You're going to have to download the episode to get that, but it'll be worth it, I promise. Christian, what about you? What's going on this week?
This Friday at UCB Sunset, if you are in Los Angeles, is Trifecta, which I host with Moses Storm, who you might have seen. And I'm about to plug his movie, then I forgot. Unfriended? Is that the Skype horror movie? It had a different name when I saw it at South.
Unfriended.
Unfriended. You roll it off. Have you watched it, Jeff?
No, I have not.
It's effective. I mean, it is what it is. It's a cheaply made, you know, found footage-esque horror movie, but I was pleasantly surprised. I'm not going to say you should go spend $14 to watch it in theaters, but if you like jump scare horror movies that are simple in premise and executed well, it's really interesting. And I love experimental film where it was literally all you see is a Skype window or a computer monitor as your screen. They never break that. It's cool. Anyway, Trifecta is a comedy show, though. It's Friday, 10:30 at UCB Sunset. And if you're not in LA, my comedy album is still out there called Moment in Time. Jeff, what's popping for you, buddy?
Oh, I got my usual, the Slash Filmcast. I don't think there's a new episode this week. I think we're taking a week off, and we'll be back at you next week for Avengers Age of Ultron, which I'm seeing tomorrow night. Very excited. David, did you get to see that early?
Yeah.
Oh, no spoilers, but I'm very jealous. I'm seeing it tomorrow. We have concerns. We have concerns. We have a new guest episode coming this week. That's the comedy show that I do, science and comedy. It's at wehaveconcerns.com. We had Trisha Hershberger on the show. She is awesome and funny, and that was a really fun conversation with her, and a special bonus episode for patrons. It's really cool. So wehaveconcerns.com for that. And we're getting excited. We're getting excited for E3. We're going to be doing lots of fun stuff for that coming up. So stay tuned here. Again, we have interviews coming up with the designers of Heroes of the Storm. So stay tuned for that. But first, we're going to give you your parting gift.
Hey, give us a suggestion.
David, do you have a suggestion of something to keep the people occupied through the week that might not be a video game?
Wow. I don't really have a suggestion myself. What I do that isn't video game things, I guess it's kind of related, is I paint minis, and then I also do things. I've taught myself ukulele lately, and I've been focused on that. So that's something very different than video games.
Will you adopt me? You sound like the coolest guy ever. What minis do you paint? Do you paint Warhammer minis or is this something else?
I paint Warhammer minis, but I just finished painting minis for Shadow of Brimstone, the board game or whatever. So that's what I've been doing lately, but mostly I paint Warhammer.
Does it require it feels like it would require more patience than I have. Does it require patience?
It does require a lot of patience, but I have a lot of patience. I also make Gundam models, which also takes a lot of patience.
Oh, rad. Oh, man. I got to get some more hobbies, man. Christian, how about you got a parting gift for the folks?
Batman Mad Love is a trade paperback and or graphic novel done in the Batman the Animated Series vein, written by Paul Dini, and it's an awesome Harley Quinn story. If you haven't checked it out, a lot of people might have missed it when it came out. It is cheap to get, and if you loved animated series, it is really cool.
What do you think about them Joker tats? What do you think about them Joker tats? You like them Joker tats?
I actually didn't see the picture. I just saw a picture.
You haven't?
I just saw the picture of Guy Pearce from Memento and someone dyed his hair green. So I don't know what the...
I'm getting very excited because it's only a couple weeks away from a new Neal Stephenson novel coming out. I think it's called Seven Eves is his new sci-fi novel. So if you haven't read any Neal Stephenson, I can recommend. People ask me what my favorite book of all time is, and I'm hard-pressed to answer, but traditionally I have said The Baroque Cycle by Neal Stephenson is my favorite. It's three massive tomes, gigantic volumes, but they're so good. They're so good. It's all about the birth of currency and this swashbuckling adventure novel, and it goes back and forth between time and has characters in it like Sir Isaac Newton, and it's just awesome. But I also recommend The Cryptonomicon by Neal Stephenson. And of course, everybody knows about Snow Crash and Diamond Age. So if you haven't read any Neal Stephenson, do yourself a favor. Read Neal Stephenson or wait for his new novel. I'll tell you how that is as soon as it comes out. I'm going to dive into it. I'm super excited. So that should get you through. Again, we got Dustin Browder coming up. We've got K.O.A. Milk. Yeah, that's right. Right. Oh, I mispronounce his name all the time. But these are the designers of Heroes of the Storm coming up right now. But we're going to wrap up this episode of DLC proper by thanking you guys for being here. Thanking all the folks at DLC. Until next time, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place. All right, I am very pleased to have Dustin Browder joining me on the show this week. He is the game director for Heroes of the Storm. Welcome, Dustin.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Yeah. And my listeners know that I am a gigantic fan of Heroes of the Storm. It's really all I can talk about, and they've gotten quite annoyed by it because I play about 3 or 4 hours a day. I'm hooked. I'm hooked on this game like I have not been in a long time to anything.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I'm loving it. We just got a firm release date, June 2nd. Super excited about that. Yep. What goes into the decision process at Blizzard to have a game come out of beta and be released?
It's a lot of people with a lot of different opinions. You know, obviously, you know, we're talking heavily to our engineers about how they feel about the service and how they feel about stability. Even then you don't really know, right? Because we need to see people show up on day one and see how everything holds up. We've had, you know, scenarios in the past where, you know, we add a few more users and it doesn't seem like that's that big a deal. And suddenly it trips something in the hardware and things go wrong. So that's probably our biggest, group with the most authority to decide when we go at this point. We also talk about the content and the quality of the experience. Do we feel like we're going to deliver something to our players that matches our standards for Blizzard? We feel like this is good. This is something we believe in. This is something that we're excited about. This is something, you know, we're ready to go with, and we're ready to get out into the hands of our players and sort of stand behind and say, you know, this is a version that's good to go. Obviously, we're going to keep working on it. Obviously, it's going to keep getting better for many years to come. I think, you know, World of Warcraft has shown that. Really, all of our games over the years have shown that we're, you know, enthusiastic to sort of stay with it and keep patching and developing the game. This game, of course, being free to play, allows us to continue to do that for many, many years to come. And so there will be, you know, further improvements as we go forward. It's one of the sort of the central messages of this game for us is you haven't seen anything yet. This is nothing is final. We're always going to be working on this game as long as we've got, you know, three guys who are willing to play it with us. Or I guess really we're going to need about nine guys to play it with us. Right. But as long as we've got some guys willing to play it with us, we want to keep working on this game. And so there will be more coming, and there will be, you know, new features, lots of fixes, lots of things coming. But we do feel like we have a product that we're excited about. We have something we're ready to stand behind. And the last sort of bit that we were waiting to see was, you know, were the engineers ready to go for a launch? And, you know, they said that they were. And so we're going to go for it and, you know, go for June 2nd and get it into the hands of many, many more players and sort of see what happens and see, you know, how we did.
Yeah, I mean, I am certainly not impartial on this. I adore the game, and I think you guys have really managed to create something special. And I'm excited to have more victims, I mean players, in the pool. I think that the biggest challenge for a game like this, and the biggest, my sort of biggest challenge in game to game, is matchmaking.
Sure.
I imagine a larger pool of players will improve that.
It will improve matchmaking, but temporarily it will do the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
We've been adding a lot of people over the last couple of months. I'm not going to say our matchmaking is perfect by any means, but it's going to struggle a little bit as we add a lot of new players to the pool who we know nothing about. We don't really know how good you are coming in. We have a little survey at the beginning that we ask questions about, you know, what kind of player are you, and that sort of determines what kind of tutorial experience you're going to get and has some impact on the matchmaking. But we don't really know how truthful you were, you know, mm-hmm. in that experience. You may have said, you know, you may be a veteran who wants to see the tutorial anyway. And so, you know, you're right. Like, oh, I'll see the tutorial. Or you may be somebody who's naturally good, you know, at video games in general. And so when we get a larger group of people into the pool, for several weeks minimum, our matchmaking gets a little bit more exciting as the matchmaker tries to figure out where everyone's really at.
Mm-hmm.
So those first few days around, you know, open beta and launch from the matchmaking perspective are probably our worst case scenario. Yeah. Where we know the least about everyone and there's lots of people showing up. And after that, it should continue to improve. But I know that we've been getting a lot of feedback about matchmaking from our community, and the engineers are not sort of assuming that that's because we have new people coming into the pool. They are assuming we have issues that they want to solve, and they are, you know, actively studying the issues right now, and they're actively looking at what's going on to see what we can do to sort of improve everyone's experience. We're getting lots of, you know, feedback from people on forums, our forums on Reddit and other places all over the world. We're getting feedback from people, and we're getting a lot of feedback internally as well.
Mm-hmm.
People are sending us specific replays and they're saying, hey, this was my experience. And I checked this guy's rank and he was ranked 2 and I'm ranked 20. And what does this mean? And then we're able to actually go and look inside at the matchmaker and see that match specifically and see what was it thinking when it made that match? What were its thoughts? And then we can sort of try to tune its little brain to make it a better experience.
Yeah. Is there any thought of giving players more information, like knowing what a player level is as the team gets assembled in Quick Match or even in Hero League?
We can. What we're doing right now, and it's actually having this discussion around our rank system as well. Our rank system has two components to it. One is it has a skill component to it, and the other component is participation. So right now, for example, you might be, you know, rank 40 because you're kind of new to the game. You've been playing some ranked games, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're so good, though, that we think you're going to make it to rank 5, right?
Mm.
And so we're watching you go towards rank 5 now. But you need to participate and get a certain number of games before you get there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll run into other players who may be ranked 7 or 8. And you'll think, what is this nonsense? Well, you're doing really well, right? Like you're actually on your way there, but participation's a factor. So we're discussing how much participation we should really ask for. Like the other way to go with this scenario is to say, oh, welcome. We think you're ranked 5. There you're ranked 5.
Right.
And just make you rank 5 immediately, which means we don't really care how much you play. Once you've played, you know, 20 games, you can just make them rank 5. That's the end of the story. We kind of want you to participate as well and also continue to tune because maybe you're not ranked 5. Maybe you're ranked 4. You know what I mean? And we want to get you there. And so it's sort of an open question for us right now. It's something we're definitely discussing is how much participation should this system be about? You compare it to a game like StarCraft, right? Where your actual position in the individual divisions was participation based, but your actual position, gold, silver, bronze, all that stuff was known pretty quickly. We had a pretty good idea of where you're going to be within, 5 to 10 games.
Yeah.
I think the matchmaking experts at that point said 25 games for sure. we'd have a pretty solid lock on which broadband you wanted to fall into. And so we had feedback about that system that, you know, it's really cool that you know where I'm at, you put me there, but man, I just, nothing changes for months and months and months. It's not that fun, right? Mm-hmm. So we're trying to walk the line between accuracy and fun right now. And I think we might be a little bit too far on the line of being participation-based and not enough, you know, maybe to get you where you belong a little quicker. But these are all really good questions. You know, we're not going to be, I think, in our first season when we launch, we'll still be probably be in a season zero, mm-hmm. in a preseason state where we sort of go through and tune some of these numbers a little bit more as we get a lot of feedback from our players.
I've really been enjoying watching Heroes of the Dorm. By the time my listeners hear this, we'll have already seen the finals. I'm right. going to the finals live. Really excited about that. What is your take on how Heroes of the Dorm has gone? I'm sure you guys have enjoyed it, but do you have any takeaways from that experience?
It's been exciting and terrifying all at the same time. You know, still being in a beta state and watching, you know, people play for really big prizes. You know, and they're doing everything they can ultimately to break the game it's always an adventure, honestly, even when you're out of beta. Every year when I go to BlizzCon and I'm looking at StarCraft 2, which is now, you know, almost 5 years old, I still sit there sweating bullets that something's going to go wrong in the balance, or that what if the game crashes, or I don't even know what could happen. So it's always just, terrifying, but it's also, you know, absolutely amazing to watch really, you know, great players, you know, playing the game and pulling off these great moves. We saw this, you know, amazing game over the weekend, you know, between Berkeley and Arizona, I think
yeah.
it was.
Wow, it was awesome.
Arizona clearly felt like they were behind the gun, you know, in terms of the skill. And so they kind of tried an unusual composition to break out. And I know that, you know, day nine was losing it. And I was, you know, in my study losing it as well, as these guys go with that Asmodan, Sylvanas, Zagar, I think it was, composition they were going for. And then I felt like, honestly, if they had a little bit more practice with that composition or the team they hadn't been playing had been quite so strong, I felt like their strategy was solid. I felt like they could have pulled it off and mm-hmm. that would have been really amazing. So super exciting game to watch. Absolutely amazing. And some of the big takeaways, obviously, we're not seeing the level of diversity in the team compositions I would like to see.
Right. That's, you know, what I was going to ask.
If about. I see Jaina pick first one more time, I may throw something.
Jaina,
in fact,
Vela,
it was really funny.
Jaina
there was
Vela.
This moment in the show last weekend where they brought up the picks, right? And Jaina, and by the time it got up, Jaina was already first pick. Like, she was already first pick, and they didn't even comment. They just kind of went on. And I'm like, is this how it is right now? Should we just auto choose first pick for Jaina? Is that what it's going to be? But we are seeing slightly more interesting compositions in other esports adventures that are going on these days. So some of that, I think there's two things going on. One is we have no bans in this, and that was, you know, this came together so quickly, and there were some concerns about a lot of the players not having access to enough heroes to actually play. And so they didn't want players to require 11 heroes instead of 10. So they went without any bans. I think no bans is a factor. And so obviously going forward, we'll be looking hard at bans and how many bans we want to do and all of that when we sort of start talking about our esports plans for the rest of the year. At the same time, I think a lot of these guys just got into the beta and they are also like, look, I'm good with these two heroes. Okay, this is what I got. And they'd rather play to their strengths than play something unusual that they haven't had a chance to really practice with yet. Yeah. And that is correct. I mean, that is absolutely a valid choice. And I, you know, when I play, you know, ranked now with pug players and they say, what should I be? I'm like, be what you're good at.
I say the same thing.
You know, just don't worry about it. Maybe it makes you happy. I want you to be happy. I want you to play what you're confident in.
Right.
I don't want you to play something for me, something that is the meta pick. Because honestly, at my skill level, play doesn't matter that much, right?
Like, yeah.
And for these guys, you know, coming in where some of them have just got into the beta just now, you know, in the last couple of weeks, really, even though I'm sure they're all very skilled players, you know, coming from other games, even so, I would tell them to go with what they're comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's also somewhat restricting it. But I think if we can get to bans, that'll be a big deal. And then the last question, of course, is, you know, where are we at on balance? And that I don't know the answer to yet, but we're watching it, you know, vigorously with, you know, a great deal of trepidation as we're watching these things, and we're going to try some things, you know, going forward in the short term, but there may be some long-term fixes we want to do. And fortunately, we have a lot of tools at our disposal. Not only we have, you know, the ability to add more heroes to the game, which may shake up the meta quite a bit, but we also have, you know, sort of a per hero customization system with these talents.
Mm-hmm.
We have the power to go into any individual hero, and by adjusting their talents alone, we can make them more viable, or we can give them, you know, counter picks and talents that can shape up the meta. For example, if we were seeing double or triple support being more and more powerful, we could go in and actually put in Mortal Strike style talents into some of the heroes that would, you know, maybe reduce the effectiveness of support comps. We have all kinds of tools that allow us to make fixes going forward. We'll just have to see what fixes do we need to make and which tool seems the most appropriate.
That's awesome. Just on a side note, from a coverage standpoint, I wish there was more discussion of talent builds in the commentary of the matches, because I think it's so important to, you know, to how the matches go. Talking about introducing new characters and new maps, what goes into creating a new character? Are you looking at a need? Are you saying, well, we don't have any, you know, ranged tanks. Right. We don't have any. Is it trying to fill a slot, or is it more coming from theme and character in the
it
lore?
It really depends on the character completely. Mm-hmm. For instance, Jaina was a slot. We didn't feel like we had enough mages in the game as a particular playstyle, not the personality of a mage, but the playstyle of the, you know, mana constrained, high burst damage, low on the escapes kind of character.
Right.
You know, that's a style of play that's really enjoyable. And you could argue that Nova's a little bit in that camp, but her cloak really allows her to play in a very different way. You know what I mean? And I've certainly seen some players argue that Zagara is a little bit in that camp, but she's also not really. She's such a pusher, right? First and foremost. And she's even a very viable poker kind of character. And so she doesn't really fulfill that mage slot. So we knew we wanted to do a mage as an archetype. And then obviously, you know, Jaina is a character that, you know, is from the lore that we've been wanting to do for a long time anyway. And so it just made sense to roll those two together. In other cases, we'll have, you know, an idea for the types of things the game needs more of. But, you know, it's very loose as to, you know, what character that could be. And then sometimes we just have a character we want to do. We have a mechanic that we think is interesting, or we have, you know, a physical look that we would love, you know, to get into the game, a particular character that makes sense. Like Chen didn't come from the need for another tank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Chen just came from, we should do Chen, that'd be cool. Okay, right? Like, as opposed to Lili, who came from, we should have a really easy to play support character.
Right,
a character that really anybody could pick up, because a lot of new users, they have trouble surviving the team fights. They get lost in the shuffle. They have problems sort of maintaining the, you know, where their character is. And while Uther is a fairly easy to play support character, he also has to kind of go into the mix every now and then. It's easy to lose track of him. Let's go with somebody who's really easy to play because they're ranged and maybe doesn't have a lot of targeting. And who could that be? Oh, let's try Lili. That'd be a fun game. We need more cute characters too at the same time, right? We want to appeal to a wide range of player types and what they're interested in. So, you know, it really depends. It's really a combination of things. Sometimes it's purely mechanics. Sometimes it's purely art. It's often a combination of the two that leads us to a particular character. Sometimes it's a request from the players. You know, when we were at BlizzCon in 2013 and we were showing off the game, Lost Vikings came up again and again and again. I mean, literally almost every interview, almost every third person I talked to on the show floor, when they would say, well, what universes will you do? And I'll say, we would do anything. And they'd say, oh, really? Lost Vikings? And they would look at us kind of pointedly like, I don't think you got the stones. I don't think you're going to do it. And I'd say, hey, anything's possible. And so that became kind of a mission for us throughout early and mid 2014. Could we get Lost Vikings into this game, and how would they play?
And they play so differently. It's so cool. I love the willingness to push the boundaries on characters as well. My personal wish list for characters is I want a peon in the game as a playable.
That's not a bad idea at all. What about something like a probe? Would that be?
There you go. Yeah, that'd be
peon,
awesome.
Or does it need to be an orc or a human specifically? Like, what are your thoughts?
I was thinking like an orc grunt or a human peon, grunt. But I love the idea of a probe that's just, it really can't do much.
But it does something amazing with building somehow, right? Like, it's got some kind of plan and it's going to execute on it.
Right. It transforms into a city in some way, you know?
Right? Yeah, it's making barracks in every lane. I don't know. I do think those kinds of characters, when we really get out of the mold, that's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
When you've got your Abathur, your Murkies and your Lost Vikings, where it really kind of shakes up how you view the game and you're playing some fundamentally different kind of play experience. And that's where we really want to keep doing those. I don't think we're going to do 50 of those a year or anything. You know, I think it wants to be a percentage. I think you want to be able to see a new character that kind of plays in a way that you understand. But every once in a while, you definitely want to see a character like, well, I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah.
That's interesting, right? And hopefully it clicks with some of our players, that particular weirdo And it goes on to be, you know, something they really enjoy about the game.
In that same vein, how far afield are you guys willing to go with map design? Because I love the variety of maps that we have now, but I also fantasize about something even crazier and wilder. Are there internal, you know, proposals for stuff that's really outside the box?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We definitely want to keep pushing it. I don't know how far we could go. At some point, we may go, okay, that was too far, right, and come back. But we definitely want to keep doing really strange stuff. We'd obviously like to do different modes going forward as well that would also sort of change the rules as to what we could and could not accomplish. But even within sort of the core game experience, between your quick match and your rank play experience, I think we'd really like to take some more steps and really push the boundaries of what is possible and what is not possible. And so I think, you know, look for more. We're gonna be experimenting with some stuff, you know, here in over the next year. And I think you'll definitely see us try some stuff. And I'd be love to hear your feedback and the feedback of our players as to how successful that kind of stuff is and whether or not we want more or less of that or what it wants to be.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest, most important things that we've said, you know, for this game is, you know, we've told this to the development team as well. I've told the development team, if you're not having fun making this game 2 years from now, we've done something wrong. Like, we really want to come in and I want to see you guys doing stuff that excites you, that challenges you creatively, that makes you think, wow, we're doing some really interesting stuff today, as opposed to, hey, it's time to make another range damage dealer. Here we go, right? I really want you to feel like the developers are weapons free when it comes to ideas. They can do whatever they want with the heroes. They can do whatever they want with the battlegrounds. That we should be looking to invent new game modes. We should be looking to add new types of progression systems. We should be looking to add whatever we can think of to keep this game exciting for our players. Because as long as we're having fun making it, there's a pretty good chance. I mean, we could go too far, obviously, but there's a pretty good chance that they're going to be entertained by our efforts. And I think that's a lesson that we've really learned from watching the World of Warcraft team, right? Where, especially with Warlords of Draenor, I felt like they really did some kind of unusual stuff with the garrisons, and they really were pushing the boundaries of what I sort of anticipated an expansion pack would look like and feel like. And that was sort of an important learning, because we want this game to go on for 10 years. We want it to be around for our players so long as our, and this has been true of all of our games for many years, but, you know, typically we have these long tails, you know, and StarCraft has a long tail in its game, a long chance to play just because of the multiplayer experience and because of the mod making experience. And so that's not something that we have to constantly adding to keep it fresh. The multiplayer experience remains fresh with balance patches and map changes, and the mod making experience remains fresh because our players are constantly contributing amazing content to the game. But for Heroes, it's in many ways, at least until we get more mod tools in, which we will, but for now it's up to us, right? And so we really want to make sure that we're constantly challenging ourselves to provide really cool stuff for the players, so that every time, you know, if you've been gone for a month and you come back, you're like, whoa, what is going on? This is awesome. Yeah. We really want that experience for people.
So there will be sort of custom map mods at some point?
Oh, I think it's highly, highly likely.
Oh, cool.
I don't anticipate a world where Team One, which is the team that builds this game, doesn't get to that. We've built the mod-making tools. I mean, this team's been building mod-making tools for, like, I don't know, 15, 17 years, something ridiculous like that, right? It's been part of every one of our games that we've shipped from Team One. It's something we're very passionate about on the team. Our engineers, our designers, our artists are all very excited about it. The only reason we haven't done it yet is just time, and we have a little bit of a hiccup in terms of, it's a free-to-play game. If you decide to load up the mod that's, you know, Frodo versus Superman, and suddenly, you know, Warner Brothers and DC are calling us and saying, what are you guys doing?
Right.
And we take it down, you can put it right back up. Right.
Yeah.
And, or if you put up something pornographic or something that's just not appropriate, you know, for whatever reason, it could be a legal reason, it could be a sort of, you know, values reason, something that's just not appropriate. Mm-hmm. We don't really have any way to remove it and keep it removed. What we would do in StarCraft is we'd remove the thing, and if you're really bad, we'd delete your account. It doesn't prevent you from putting it up again, but you got to go, you know, spend, you know, 20, 30, 40 bucks, whatever it is, to get that thing back on. So it's a bit of a barrier. Most players won't do it. It keeps our community healthy and safe. In this case, we've got to figure, and it's not an impossible problem, right? We just got to come up with some rules and do it. We just haven't had time to get to that yet.
It seems like Blizzard as a company overall is really embracing the idea of Heroes as a concept. And we see Overwatch. And when I saw the announcement for Overwatch, the first thing I thought was, oh my God, I can't wait till these characters are in Heroes of the Storm. And I love that. I think it creates these iconic characters and it attaches you to the lore in a really profound way. Is there a lot of overlap or, you know, camaraderie between the teams in the sense of like, oh my gosh, that character can do this in your game, so I want it to do this in my game kind of thing? Does that happen?
There absolutely is. We don't always talk about it in quite that way, but I think if you look at our games, I think you'll see a lot of inspiration moving back and forth between the teams.
Mm-hmm.
And it's often subtle. Like nobody, when they see another hero, another team, is going to set out to copy that hero.
Right.
Everybody's got way too much respect for everybody else's work, and they all want to do something new anyway. So no one's going to set out to do it, but it's going to happen. Like we're going to end up with, oh wait, that is somebody what you did. Okay. You know, I'm okay. You know what I mean? Like it's definitely going to happen. And if you look across our games, I think you'll certainly see that there are a shared sense of values of the types of abilities that will work on a hero, whether it's a World of Warcraft character or Warcraft 3 hero, or, you know, a single player hero in StarCraft or a Heroes of the Storm character in Overwatch. There's definitely similar design values that are going to lead to certain types of abilities. And then there's going to be inspiration that will happen. I have had on occasion somebody, you know, look at something somebody else think, and I'm just going to do that in my game. Right? Like, that's just so cool. But it's not that common. I think usually it's more subtle. It's usually people are desperately trying to do something that's completely original, and they end up at some point kind of taking something that feels kind of similar. They end up getting back to something that ends up looking the same, even though they started someplace completely different when they first sat down to work on something.
Yeah. I don't think people talk enough about how great Heroes of the Storm looks. I think it is by far Blizzard's most attractive game. The engine is gorgeous. The character models are incredible. It makes me wish Diablo looked like that. And I love the way in the most recent patch, there was a bigger emphasis on that, the character selection screen, all the characters are larger, more detailed. I would love to be able to rotate my characters in that screen. Is there any discussion of, and also, you know, the skins are great, the color palette swaps are great. Is there any discussion of going farther with color palette swaps to be able to sort of mix and match your own color palettes or do any more customization like that?
I would certainly love to. I don't think we've gotten to mix and match yet, but that's a really interesting idea. I haven't actually heard that one in a while. I'm kind of glad you reminded me of that idea.
I have a whole list of wish lists.
I'll take them all. I'm shameless. yeah, that's absolutely awesome. No, I think it's interesting. We definitely want to do more with it. I think there's opportunities to do more, and some of the characters do better than others. And I think we'd certainly like to keep leveling that system up and provide more texture changes, even just on the palette swaps. It's been a really fun part of the game. It's certainly one of the parts of the progression system that I enjoy the most as a player is unlocking, you know, those color swatches. Like I just got Tassadar's second choice. Mm-hmm. Last night, which is kind of this purpley, it's just so cool. Yeah. It just looks fantastic. And it's not even our best one by far. You know what I mean? It's just, it really spoke to me when I was playing last night. And there's one for Vala where she's got kind of this pink look to her outfit, but then her hair is gray. Right. And it just looks like, man, this lady's seen some stuff that her hair is turning gray. I mean, this is a real demon hunter, right? Like that she's been out there, that her hair has been scared white. Like, and she just looks tough as nails, right? Like with this shock white hair and what's obviously a very young woman, right? and so I think those are fantastic. I'd certainly love to do more with those going forward. And your mixing match is interesting. One of the challenges we have with those is how easy it is for one character to look like another character because you've changed the shape a little bit with a skin and then you've changed the color as well. Like this is one of the areas where you'll notice that Tychus and Raynor don't have the most dramatic color shifts.
Right.
And I've complained frequently to the artist, like, oh, I got to do more with Tychus. Like, dude, it looks like Raynor if I change the color too much. I'm like, oh, right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I get it, right? Like, it's kind of an interesting problem. Like, why isn't this, you know, Raynor blue more blue? Like, because it looks exactly like Tychus when I do that. I'm like, oh, never mind. Right? So they've made some fixes. I think two patches ago, I think helped it some. But so there's a constant battle there. I don't know how many more we can do. We've sort of got the idea we can do one more of those before we're going to get into a point where the characters are just a total mess and nobody has any idea what's going on. But I don't know if that's true. So we'll definitely keep an eye out, you know, sort of for that going forward.
Yeah. I mean, I think I choose who I'm going to take to level 10 based on how awesome their hero skin is.
Seriously.
And
seriously.
You know, skins get wins, as they say.
Yeah, right.
Skin wins. A couple of other, while I have you, I just have to tick off my wish list a little bit. iOS app or Android app that lets me sort of keep track of my stats or even maybe watch replays would be cool if I could stream them. Anything?
I like the replay idea a lot. I don't know. We're not working on it now. So to say that somebody was coding that right now would be a complete lie. To say I'm interested is true, but let's be real. No one's working on it right now. So all you and I are doing is geeking out right now, which is totally fun, but right. No one's actually building it, but that would be cool. I love the idea.
Okay. I'd love a notification in Hero League that if your character that you've pre-selected has been selected by the other team.
A little warning.
Just, hey, you can't pick that.
Hey, because, wake up, buddy.
Yeah. A little of that would be great.
That's cool.
How have you seen Team League take off? I've had, you know, mixed reports of people saying it's kind of a ghost town so far.
Team League does not have the best adoption rate. They are not wrong. That is entirely fair feedback. I've had reports of people who can't get matches after reasonable amounts of time, and we've checked the match quality and it's not great. So, sometimes it's fine, but sometimes it's not. It really depends. If you're on the high end or low end of Team League, you can sometimes be in trouble. I actually had the honor of playing against the Berkeley team a few nights back in Team League, which will show you. Because I'm not that good, which will show you where the matchmaker was at on that particular moment where it said, all right, here's Berkeley. I don't know. You know, like, good luck. I had to lane against Zero as ETC. That did not go my
way
at all. But it was really a blast to play against them, even though they annihilated us in about 10 minutes. But, you know, I think it's something we can improve on. We are talking about fixes to it. We like the idea of the team. We think the team is cool.
Yeah.
What we want to do to either make it easier to get into that league, easier to play with your friends, or just to make the matchmaking better, I don't know. I don't have an announcement yet, but talks are active and passionate and furious, and we are definitely going to keep talking about it. But you can keep, you know, giving me that feedback, and I'll keep hearing it, but it's accurate. A fix should be made, and we will definitely make some kind of move here in the future.
What are your go-to heroes when you're playing?
You know, I'm really all over the place. I've played all of these guys for years now because I've played them internally as well as all throughout the alpha. I mean, I've been playing this game pretty much nonstop since we shipped the alpha. Right now, today, well, I've been playing Tassadar a lot, was my go-to guy last night. I'd like to get Vala to 10. I haven't done that yet either. I'm really enjoying Anubarak. That's my go-to tank right now. Mostly because I tend to overcommit and I can use his E to get out of danger.
Get out of danger, yeah.
And I'll just, you know, and he gets so much sustain. I mean, if you just build him with sustain talents, you can sometimes be in situations where like the three guys are beating on you. Your health bar is not really moving. And so I always joke with my friends. They don't go in there. I'm like, Tom, Anubarak, I can't be killed, right? Like, and then I die, and then they'll laugh at me. But so he's something I'm really enjoying right now. And then for I've always been a big specialist fan, but I recently maxed out Zagara. And Sylvanas is sort of, you know, the go-to here for everybody. So I haven't been playing her very much. I don't know why I kind of do that when the community's really enjoying something. Oh, they got that one covered. Let me check the ones that might be broken. Right. you know what I mean? And Asmodan's also a go-to. So I've been playing Gazlo as my specialist right now.
He's awesome.
Just to see how he's doing, you know, kind of looking on him and see how life, and I've been really enjoying him as well.
Well, I could talk to you for hours about Heroes of the Storm. I'm in love with the game, and I'm so glad you shared some time here, and very looking forward to it hitting for full release June 2nd. So absolutely. thank you Dustin. Absolutely. Browder, I'm really, really in love with the game, and I can't wait to see what comes down the pike next.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you for playing.
Absolutely, have a good one.
All right, now we're gonna go right to my interview with Kaeo Milker, the lead game producer on Heroes of the Storm. This was recorded at the Heroes of the Dorm finals. You'll probably hear a lot of crowd noise. We were in a back room, but the matches were still happening outside in the big Shrine Auditorium. So apologies for some of the poor audio quality, but I think there's a lot of interesting stuff here, and I thought you might want to hear it. Now we'll go right to that interview with Kaeo Milker.
So this is awesome. It is awesome. This is amazing. Like, we work so hard at this stuff, and we don't know how it all comes together. It's amazing.
Yeah. What are your feelings as far as the competition as a competition? I mean, clearly this is a game that's still in beta. How you feel about the meta? How do you feel about the way the game is performing with these guys?
Yeah, I think coming into this, you know, we started this competition only 2 months ago, not even 2 months ago, bringing in colleges from North America and Canada and just kind of opened it up. Again, we're in beta, so a lot of people didn't even have access to the game yet. So we gave them all access. So thousands of players from across the country and Canada jumped in, started playing the game. Along with that, you're like, wow, some of these people are brand new to it, but there are a lot of people who've been playing in beta for a while as well. So I think there was a good mix of people who were deeply invested in Heroes and really excited to be a part of this. You know, moving through the brackets as we worked our way here, there were definitely a lot of 2-0 sweeps in certain areas.
Yeah.
Coming here, even in the first matchup, we just saw Boston College, who was definitely you know, big underdog coming into it. They were looking like they could take it at a point here.
And first match was thrilling.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. So it's cool kind of seeing. We make this game. We're trying to give all these opportunities to kind of say it's anybody's game. And you know, when the moment by moment decisions you're making in this game will give you lots of opportunities to turn things around. It's really cool seeing it play out with these college students with so much on the line here.
Yeah,
it's exciting.
Yeah, I'm a massive fan of the game, and I play way more than I should. I mean, I'm a daily multi-hour player.
Awesome.
So I have lots of sort of in-depth questions to ask you, but I'm wondering, since this has played out over a number of weeks now, do you guys go back after a weekend of seeing competition and go, oh, I have all these ideas, or oh my gosh, we need to fix something, or what's that process like?
I think, you know, we're the same team that made StarCraft 2, we made Warcraft 3, we made the original StarCraft, so we've been making competitive games for a really long time, and I think we've had a lot of experience looking at where we kind of put the tools in players' hands, and then they do really surprising things with them, and so we're continually trying to make sure that we give enough choices and enough variety in the gameplay that they can do really cool things with them, and then it gets out there, and there's moments where we're like, ooh, they're all doing that one thing, like, right. Why aren't they doing this thing? And what we usually see, and what's cool is we have global games, and it's really fascinating. Different regions will like go through different metas at different times, and so you'll kind of see Korea or Taiwan will be doing something that North America hasn't picked up on and Europe hasn't, and it all's kind of always changing. But we try to stay back a little bit and let those things land where they're going to, and we're already seeing with Heroes across beta, across this tournament, we're already seeing them surprise us. Them all of a sudden, a hero that might have been low tier and everyone said, don't play that hero in this, like, we'll come out of nowhere and be really strong, and that's what we love. And we're trying to create those opportunities, and we love it when they take them. And again, we don't anticipate all the things. We're just trying to say, here's some choices. Like, I have no idea how they all come together, but go play with them. And it's fun. It's fun watching that all become real.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's thrilling. So you guys are coming out of beta June 2nd. What can we expect? Is there going to be a patch coming out of beta, or so? Please say there's no wipes.
So that's no, there are no wipes. We've already said for sure, no wipes. So
that's the most important part.
Your progression, your purchase, everything is legit. It stays. It's all there. Yeah. So we actually go to open beta on May 19th, and then we'll go fully launched on June 2nd. So we're excited. There's so many people who wanted to play this game and still want to play this game, and you know we were very slow rolling into beta initially. At this point, we're bringing in tons of people, and it's really exciting to kind of see everyone coming in. And you know, there's still a ton of people who will never play a game in beta. They're just like, it's not real. There's no reason. I'm not going to look at it. So it's cool to kind of get to that point where everyone can kind of say, all right, let's do it. Let's go try this thing.
So what brought you to that decision? Stability, but was there, from a design perspective, what was the, yes, we're ready?
So we spent a really long time testing this game in a live environment, and something that we've never done before as a team or as a company. We brought it first to a technical alpha that started in July of 2013. It's been a long time. We took it out really early. No, it's March of 2014 is when it first came out in technical alpha. We also tested it with a company before that in a development and company alpha for months as well. So initially we were trying to confirm gameplay. You know, this is a very established genre, and its roots go back to games that we made and maps that were made as mods in those games in StarCraft, the Aeon of Strife maps, and Warcraft 3 with the original Dota. And I think we kind of wanted to take our turn seeing what we could do with this game, do our version of it. But all the things we were trying to change about it, you know, we said it's not individual leveling, it's team leveling. There's no item shop. It's multiple battlegrounds in a genre where everyone plays predominantly one map, and that's the one that you play on. All these things were very controversial even internally, right? So I think we first had to validate the core gameplay decisions we were making and see if, does this stuff actually functionally work? Is this fun? Like, are we doing the right thing? Are people going to be like so just aghast that we dare to touch those things that they don't want to play it? But every step of the way in those testing phases, we're like, this is fun. Like, we are loving this. And, you know, we distilled it down to 20-minute games. So all these things, like, they all add up to just make it super fun. And it really is, to us, kind of grabbing all the great stuff and kind of pushing aside the things that we didn't enjoy so much. Like, last hitting, we just kind of said, let's kind of get that out of there.
Right.
So I think a big part of it was confirming the gameplay side of it. And then there was a huge technical thing, too, where this is a free-to-play game. That means anybody can play it anywhere at some point, right? If they have a computer that can... it's 5 years old and it can run, you know, run a game that came out 7 years ago for us, they can run this game. So there's a lot of stability concerns. There's a lot of scalability concerns. So once we got into closed beta, that was really about trying to bring in much larger audiences and starting to see where things start falling over with our technology. And so a lot of the decision process has been about working our way through that process, knowing that we have options. And it's wow, the crowd is going crazy right now.
It's a big Berkeley crowd out there too.
Yeah, yeah, we got to check this out.
It's awesome.
So, I think a lot of the decision is about, can we successfully go through those stages and feel like we can scale the game successfully, and that when we encounter problems, because you're always going to encounter problems with these things. I think when you watch games releasing across the spectrum, everyone's like, why are game developers still having this problem with like scalability? Like, it's a really complicated problem, and it changes every time with every game. We're in a unique situation that we have BattleNet, which is a shared environment, a platform that all of our games play on. We happen to have a lot of really big games, so it starts getting very dangerous with us, because a game like Heroes of the Storm has the potential to take down a game like World of Warcraft, which there's a lot of paying subscribers to World of Warcraft. We do not want to take World of Warcraft down, right? That's not something on our list of things to do. Diablo 3 is gigantic. Hearthstone is gigantic. Like, there's so much going on. So it's about kind of testing things and making sure not just that they hold together, but that when they inevitably fall apart, we have a way to recover from it.
You definitely have a lot of gigantic games. Is there a bar that Heroes of the Storm needs to hit, or you guys are hoping it'll hit? I mean, it's especially compared to giants like League and Dota.
Sure. So I think we've approached this game the way we've approached all of our games going back to the very beginning of Blizzard, which is we are a group of very passionate gamers who happen to be lucky enough to be getting to make games. And I think we're always trying to make the games we want to play. It's challenging with big teams of people to find those games that you want to play, but I think with this one is another opportunity that we really rallied behind people who were really excited about the changes we were making. They were able to play it from home way early in its development and fall in love with it and be able to critique it and change it in a meaningful way in its infancy. And I think going through that whole process end to end, it sets us up to know that we're making the right choices. And I think every game Blizzard ever made was made with very similar motives, right? We didn't go in a room and talk about, we're going to sell this many copies and we're going to make this much money. We go, what's fun to us right now? Like, if we look at the gaming landscape, what do we love playing? What would we like to be playing? And that's how we approach game development. And so I think we've stayed totally true to those roots. My goal, I think this game has limitless potential. Clearly, the MOBA genre is gigantic. I think we already have a piece of it and we're in beta, and that's exciting to me. People are loving this game. I hear from people, both those who love the other games in the genre and people who hate them have come and said how much they really enjoy Heroes of the Storm. So I feel like those choices that we've made and decisions and the work is aligning to something that can be really great. As a game, it's already really great. So I think the rest of it is going to be the icing, and I look forward to seeing what comes as more and more people have an opportunity to play it.
Yeah, it certainly has captured me like very few games before it ever have. It seems to me that Blizzard has sort of made a conscious choice, and my question is it a conscious choice, to kind of embrace the concept of heroes? It seems like Overwatch is really built around heroes. It seems like, from a company perspective, it's embracing the lore and really investing in these characters. Is that something that was a conscious company-wide thing, or is it just sort of natural?
Sure. Well, for heroes, you know, we're making kind of this game that is this collision of all the Blizzard universes going back 20-plus years, and we brought in the Lost Vikings now that go back to our very first game that we made in 1992, our first party game that we made. So we are a company made up of fans, like passionate Blizzard gamers, and I think it's very exciting for us to have this opportunity for everyone, artists, engineers, programmers, producers, we're all like, we love these characters. We have memories that are like some of our fondest, earliest gaming memories even go back to some of these people. So I think it's so exciting to be able to pull from all that and bring them together in a way that no one's ever seen before and have fun with them in a totally different way. It's totally inspiring, and I think everybody, we love it. And there's so many left to choose from. Like, yeah, right now,
I know we were driving here making a list of like what we wish for.
No, the hard part right now is like, man, how do we even begin to prioritize this stuff? A lot of it is about this balance between what the game needs functionally, like what roles we need to fill. But thankfully, we have this immense catalog of really cool characters that go way back that we can pull from. But yeah, that was our thing. It was just, we love bringing these worlds together. And you know, we've been doing it with the heroes, and so far in the game today, we have 7 battlegrounds, and none of them are in Blizzard IP worlds, and everyone's like, so when are you going to do Blizzard IP worlds? We did announce at BlizzCon last year that we're working on a Diablo, Diablo-themed run right now. So, and that's, again, the beginning. So anything you've ever seen in a Blizzard game from this entire awesome history of this company can get pulled into Heroes, and we're so excited about that. I don't know, like, we're as excited about it as the players are, right? We just... Yeah. Can't wait.
What are your favorite heroes to play?
So I play a lot of heroes. Kerrigan is kind of my go-to lady, and I keep telling people this. Like, I have a personal attachment to Kerrigan. Like, I worked on StarCraft 2 for many, many years. The original StarCraft was probably my all-time favorite game, and one of the things that led me to come to Blizzard almost 14 years ago. Like, I really, really care about it. But Kerrigan, I named my daughter Kerrigan. Like,
oh, well, there you go.
I'm very, very attached to her. So
I named my daughter Brightwing, which is very weird.
I don't know. I like Kerrigan a lot. I'm super aggressive, and Kerrigan is definitely for people who want to be aggressive. She's a melee assassin. She needs to get in the thick of things. She can die a lot while she's in the pursuit of that. But I don't know. With a good Tassadar at my side, like diving in, being just way too aggressive, I really love playing Kerrigan a lot.
That's awesome. Yeah.
It's cool to see her out there. She just had some great moments out there.
Actually. Oh, I know. I love the fact they were picking Kerrigan.
Yeah, no, yeah. She's not like considered a super top tier character.
Right.
I saw some awesome Boston College stuff going on out there today. So,
I think we were talking on the way here about the big differentiator for heroes, at least in the genre, is the map design and how maps change your strategy. And it's so much fun, especially watching these guys at high levels see how they strategize the maps. Pushing that forward and getting really adventurous with map design, is that something you guys are excited about? And can you share any kind of outside the box ideas?
Well, I can say that we approached it, again, we were very, very kind of concerned about what people's feelings would be about multiple maps. Like, even if you look at like established games in the genre, they would come out with different maps and their communities just wholeheartedly rejected them. Right? They're just like, nope, that's not how you play.
We hate change.
Yeah. So we knew we wanted to come in with multiple battlegrounds from the beginning to kind of make people prepared for that. Like, hey, this is different. Come try this. It's okay. You'll enjoy it. And I think that choice has served us well, and it continues to do it. But we intentionally kept it in a framework that would be familiar to those people too. We didn't want them to come in and be like, what? This is like totally different. Nothing makes any sense. I can't play this game.
Right.
So you're seeing some familiar themes right now. There's a core. The victory objective today is a core, right? You're destroying this thing, and that when you kill that thing, you win. There are towers, although we've added gates and towns and forts and things to it and healing wells and stuff, but we're kind of pivoting off of something that they're familiar with. So my expectation is that as more and more people get into this game and they embrace, like, okay, now there's 7 battlegrounds, or there's 9, or there's 10, and they feel comfortable with that dynamic that we've introduced, then being able to totally pivot off of that and say, okay, what if there is no core now? What if that's not what the objective is of this game, and there's something completely different? How do we introduce that kind of stuff to players? And I think we want to do those things, and I think we're kind of laying a path that gets us there. But right now, I think it's a really cool combination of something that's familiar enough that everyone can jump into it. The tens of millions of players, hundreds of millions of players who played these games can jump in and go, cool, I kind of get that. Ooh, and there's this other thing. There's these mechanics that's just a cool other option, a choice I can make, a strategy that I can make.
So start conservative and then grow from there.
Yeah, I think we just want to kind of, let's welcome everyone in and let's see the show what we have. But one of the tenets of this game is, like, you ain't seen nothing yet. Like, this thing's always evolving. We're going to be heroes, battlegrounds, gameplay modes. Like, everything, I think, is going to be changing. And we're used to making box games where we spend many, many years working on a game and we get it all there and we put it out. And then we're like, we wait. And maybe a year or two later, we come back out with the expansion. We've set ourselves up over the last 2 years to just make content and put it out in this game continuously and have this feedback loop where they get it and they like it or they hate it. And we know that better and we make the next thing that much better. And so I think we're excited to be able to do that at a much faster pace than we ever have before and see things that we work on today be in the game in a few months instead of a few years. So
it's awesome.
Yeah, be great.
Good.
So you're talking about in the different regions having different metas at one time and they're kind of rotating around. Once the floodgates open, the game releases, heroes are coming out, new maps are coming out. What's the balance cycle potentially going to look like? Are we looking at monthly balance cycles or...
Yeah, we're talking about that. So we, again, with our history from all the other competitive strategy games that we've made with StarCraft and Warcraft 3 and StarCraft 2, we definitely know we want to sit back and we like to let the meta settle down a bit. And like I said before, we kind of give the players all these tools and we're not sure how they're going to use them. And sometimes they all flock to one thing and we're always like, what about all of these things? And we don't want to change this one thing they're flocking to just because they can't see these things yet.
Right.
So we're very cautious about that stuff. There's not like a set cycle, like we're going to have to do these things and keep revisiting it. I think it's much more, we're looking at the current landscape of heroes and battlegrounds. We know there are things that we're like watching them, both from a gameplay perspective, because we all play the game and we come back to the office after playing all night and we're like talking, debating very very passionately about what our experiences were. But we also get a lot of game data as well. And like seeing, it's not just what your sensation is super important. Your perception of what's happening is really important. But then there's the overall picture of what's really happening and the data behind that. And so we're trying to balance all these things. Like someone could come in and we could say, Kerrigan's broken, fix Kerrigan now. And then they'll have to be like, whoa, okay, hold on. What happens when you make those changes to Kerrigan right now today in this landscape? So I think you can expect to see regular updates to heroes, balance-wise, talent-wise. Like we could do complete overhauls of talent systems or adding talents, especially when we see that there are talents that are not being selected very often. Sometimes that means buffing up one that's underrepresented. Sometimes that means completely redoing a talent tree for a given hero. But we're looking for those opportunities, but we will be very cautious and very strategic about those changes, and not just, we don't want to mess everything up, because there's a lot that's working great, and some of these knobs are very delicate. And so I think you can watch us do frequent updates, but conservative and cautious along the way too.
One of the things I don't think people talk about enough about this game is how great it looks. And I love the latest patch with the real emphasis on the character models, how much bigger they were in the selection screen and stuff. I wish I could rotate them and stuff. My two favorite talents in the game are Brightwing's Polymorph and Shrink Ray, because they have such wonderful feedback visually. And I love, you know, adding in the Devour with stitches in the
screen. Overlays and stuff, yeah.
I think, is there more plans for that kind of visual stuff?
Definitely. I think every opportunity we get for those things, we walk this fine line where there's a lot going on in this game. We got 5 versus 5, and there's tons of spells and abilities, and we're trying to balance readability with epicness, and it's sometimes we go a little too far in one direction or another, but we love doing that stuff. I think you've seen that in all Blizzard games too. Like that's some of that fun, polishy things that we live for, I think, on the development team. So look for us to always find those opportunities, and you'll see certain characters that get to really use them. But unfortunately, like, if everyone gets all that kind of stuff, I think the whole game kind of falls apart at a certain point.
Right, it's
like,
too gimmicky. Yeah.
So yeah, we try to dole those out carefully.
I think also watching this tournament, it makes you want to be able to download these matches and watch them. Is that something that you guys are considering?
Yeah, so right now we have replay support in the game. Currently, the replays only work with the active version of the game, so like the games that are being played today, if we patched the game and we broke replay versioning, you know, a couple weeks from now or something, you'd no longer be able to watch them. StarCraft II right now has it so that anytime, you can basically load replays that go way back, and we load an older version of the game and then you watch them. So that's something that I think we'll look in the future and explore when is the right time and what's required to bring that kind of like previous version replay support to heroes. But there's also lots of other opportunities and things I think that in time we'll discuss, like, what if you could, you know, jump in and watch this game being played live in the client, and not just from a replay of a game that was already played or something. So I think all those things are on the table. Our focus right now is on just making the game as great as it can be and setting our team up so that we can support it moving forward, and getting it out in as many people's hands as we can. But yeah, there's so much cool stuff like that I think that we're going to be able to explore with this game. And like I said, it's never really done. It's always something that's in constant evolution. So there's a lot of opportunity to bring in all those kind of things to it.
Yeah. A couple months ago, we had the artifact system.
Yeah.
And then we yanked it out, gave everyone some gold back. What did you guys learn from that? Are there any plans to add any more ways to customize your account similar to that? Or
yeah, so artifacts were an interesting thing. So it was like at the time, we put artifacts out. Again, we went to testing. That was during our technical alpha, actually, that we put artifacts in. So it was a time that normally no one outside of Blizzard would have seen our game, and we try things like that constantly. Like, we fail so much on the way to making a great game. You know, I think it's interesting to do that because I think the public saw that and it was like, whoa, how could you make such a misstep? We're like, we make these missteps all the time. Like, that's kind of called game development, but you guys were there along for the ride with us. I think some of the big takeaways from that is that we've made this game that's really approachable, and that by its very design, it's a very level playing field all the time for people, and that's really important to us. We were trying to give them more customization options with the artifact system. We were trying to give them options to be able to layer more ways to change the way that their heroes play on top of it. Ultimately, we weren't feeling that great about it, but we wanted to try it. We wanted to see what happened with it. We were fortunate enough to have a Tech Alpha audience who could do that with us, and I think they reinforced our internal cries about that as well. And so we were quickly looking at it and said, all right, here's what's not working about it. It does make this emphasis on, like, oh, I need to work hard and do this thing just to make my character viable, which is not something that sounds particularly fun in a competitive game. And I think other games do very similar things right now, but it's something that it didn't feel right for Heroes, and we agreed with that. And again, internally, we were kind of having that discussion already, but we want to try things because sometimes things surprise us. Sometimes something that we don't think is going to work does, and vice versa. So
yeah.
I think we'll continue to look for ways to provide customization options, but I think our talent system is a really good way to do that. I think it's something that everyone has access to. Everyone has the ability to make the same choices at the same time. And it's not something that is so limited or so difficult to achieve for everybody. So I think look for us to find those options, but not...
Yeah.
We definitely have learned, don't go that direction where it's like painting them in a corner or making it so that they have to make some hard choice or
right.
spend, feel like they have to go grind somewhere and spend save all their gold just to make this one character they love be totally viable.
Better.
Yeah, right. Like...
Yeah. So much of these games comes down to this discussion of toxic community or finding the right people to play with. And so much of that, I think, lives and dies on matchmaking. I would love to hear you talk about the challenges of matchmaking, but specifically, is there any desire to let the player in on some of those things, like to see who you're matched up with as far as their hero level, their rank, their any of that information, so you can kind of judge who you're playing with? So or does that lead to like more frustration?
No, it's kind of this weird slippery slope that I think we're always trying to navigate. We have like a hidden MMR. We had this in StarCraft 2 as well. And we tend to try to expose things to players that are a little more tangible and that they can relate to each other on a little better. So we have rank in heroes right now in ranked modes. But a lot of people play quick match because they want to just jump in and pick the hero they want to play. And actually, that's a super popular way to play the game. I think I still play a ton of quick match, even with Hero League and Team League in the game, and I expect that a lot of people are going to keep doing that as well. We definitely want to show them more things that let them understand, like, was I at an advantage or a disadvantage? Like, was that victory super epic and that defeat wasn't as bad as it felt like because they were actually a little better than me?
Right.
I think we want to give them opportunities to understand some of those kind of things, but we're still always debating, you know, if we explicitly just say, this is your MMR and this number, fixate on this number, however we choose to visualize it. Like, that's what the game is all about. Because that's not really what the game is all about. There's a lot of other things, I think, that we're trying to get people to be able to explore and enjoy, and it's not just that matchmaking rating number, but it's something we're constantly talking about. There are a lot of challenges with matchmaking in general, especially a 5v5 game. There's compositions that come into play in quick match where people pre-select their heroes, which is not something that you traditionally do in this game. In our ranked modes, you have draft mode, so it kind of handles that a little better, but then you're still dealing with the skill differences, although we work really hard to take pull people together of equal skill and get them matched both on their team and against an enemy team that is in the same ballpark that they're in. I think there are challenges with that across the alpha and beta because our population was so limited, but it gets bigger every day, and I think a lot of those things actually improve dramatically the more people we bring into the game. We have more options of who to pull together, but it's another one of these things that's constantly evolving and that we're iterating on, and we just made a big blog post about it just a couple weeks ago, kind of explaining, because a lot of people were up in arms about, I keep getting matched up against a team where they have healers and I don't, and there's lots of other things going on, and there's a ton of stuff like that happens, and there are things that people don't understand today either that we don't expose that I think our takeaway with that is, like, there's more information we need to expose to let them understand. Like, you should understand that the opposing team is a party of four, and that's why they have this weird composition, is because they pre-selected, they wanted to play four supports.
Yeah,
I don't know. That's what their thing. They wanted to do that, so it's not that we matched a bunch of random people together and said, "Here's four supports." Like,
yeah.
So
I would love to know if I've been matched with a group that queued together. I think that's so helpful. It's interesting. You know. Okay, well, these guys are going to be playing together.
Yep.
It's just good information to have.
Yeah. And so we did talk about right now the statistics of what we've seen, which is that almost like it was like 90%+ of the time we're getting the right matches across both teams, where if it was a 3 and a 2 on your team, it's a 3 and a 2 on the other team,
right.
Almost always. You're not, because if people walk away going, that was a 5-man team and I just got rolled by a 5-man team and I solo queued, but it's like, actually that was you were a 4-1 and they were a 4-1 and
right.
It just didn't go your way. Like,
yeah.
So I think we'll look for ways to let you at least understand those kind of things, because there's a perception that, like, the game did this to me and the matchmaking's broken, but it's like, actually, it all kind of went right. It wasn't a good game. That particular match wasn't great for you, but there's more. Like, it's 20 minutes,
yeah.
Let's do it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, and do you have any last questions?
One of my favorite things about Warcraft 3 was automated tournaments. Where that was college, that was the thing I looked forward to, you know, every day getting home from school and doing this. Any chance we might see that down the road?
Definitely. I think it's something that we're really excited about. I think it would be great for Heroes of the Storm. It's not something that we're actively working on right now, but it's totally on our radar, and it's something I would love to bring to the game, and I think it would be a pretty awesome experience in Heroes.
Well, we both love the game, and appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk. Oh,
awesome. Yeah, I'm glad you guys are enjoying it. Yeah.
Very, very much so.
Yeah.
Much
more so, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.